Fights. I was there at the little big horn. I heard many men lying. I saw.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. Former White House counterterrorism expert Richard Clark accused the Bush administration on Tuesday of going on the offensive against him to divert attention from the truth that the administration did virtually nothing about al-Qaeda prior to September 11, 2001. Clark, author of the newly released book Against All Enemies, also said the administration focused on alleged Iraqi ties to the terrorist attacks, while there was no evidence that Saddam Hussein's dictatorship was involved. Clark said the White House is papering over facts such as in the weeks immediately after 9/11, the president signed a national security directive instructing the Pentagon to prepare for the invasion of Iraq, even though they knew at the time that Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11. Members of the federal panel that's been looking into 9/11 say they're not hearing from everyone they want to hear from. The panel has opened 2 days of hearings on the anti-terrorism efforts of the Bush and Clinton administrations before 9/11. The 10-member panel had invited National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice to testify. She declined, with the White House citing concerns about separation of powers. Former Democratic Congressman Timothy Raymer noted that Rice has been featured in the media disputing the claims in Richard Clark's book Against All Enemies. He suggests that the debate shouldn't be played out in the media, but before the panel. Top Democrats stepped up their attacks on George W. Bush's credibility on Tuesday, accusing the White House of abuses of power and trying to squelch dissent and bad news on a range of fronts. They recalled moves to discredit former Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill, who questioned Bush's Iraq policy in a book in January, and the leaking of the identity of CIA operative Valerie Plame when her husband, former diplomat Joseph Wilson, accused Bush of hyping pre-war intelligence on Iraq. Senate Democratic Leader Tom Daschle of South Dakota said, "We are seeing abuses of power that cannot be tolerated. The president needs to put a stop to it right now. We need to get to the truth, and the president needs to help us do that." More news after this.
Military veterans deserve better. They must wait endlessly for basic health care from the Department of Veterans Affairs. If you or a military veteran you know is one of the many heroes waiting for VA health care, the American Legion wants to tell your story to your elected officials in Washington, D.C.
Visitors to a zoo in eastern India have been banned from laughing after a state politician said he found it offensive. It happened after members of a local laughter club visited the Sanjay Gandhi Botanical Garden and Zoo in Patna. The politician became angry when he saw the group laughing while he was walking past the director's office. After ordering them to stop laughing, he issued instructions to a zoo official banning laughter at the zoo. For Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Let me tell you a story of progressive progress. In 1939, two-thirds of America's senior citizens lived their golden years in cold, hard poverty. Just a decade later, that percentage was down to half. By 1959, it was only one-third, and today the number is less than 10%. That's progress. What's progressive about it is that this decline in poverty is the result of the New Deal's passage of our nation's landmark Social Security program. Yes, the very same program now under attack by Wall Street wolves and congressional opportunists of both parties who insist that Social Security is doomed to failure and facing an imminent financial crisis. Horse duties. First, this is a program that actually works, providing the modicum of income so our gray-haired citizens have a basic level of decent living when their earning years are over. Second, Social Security is a model of efficiency, requiring only a single percent in administrative costs. Compare that to the insurance corporations that suck out one-third of our health care dollars to pay for their corporate bureaucracies, executive salaries, marble palaces, and advertising. But no, cry the chicken littlers, Social Security is going broke. Hogwash. Without changing anything, Social Security is financially sound for the next 40 years. Name me a corporation that can claim that. Yet the Bushites, on behalf of Wall Street finaglers, seek to privatize this public treasure, pushing people to put their Social Security nest egg into the stock market. Hello? These are the same investment geniuses who only 3 years ago would have advised you to invest in Enron, a stock that fell from $97 a share to 57 cents in only 1 year. This is Jim Hightower saying, I say no one should be allowed to reform Social Security unless they actually need it.
Wow, that's hot.
I think it's cool.
At that speed, definitely hot.
I don't see it that way.
I forgot, you're more right brain.
Right. 24 prints a minute. That's cool.
In black and white or color?
Cool.
For under $1,000.
Cool.
From Xerox?
Really cool.
Sorry, 24 color pages a minute is nothing but hot.
You think anything that's fast is hot?
That's cold.
The new Xerox Phaser 8400, the world's fastest office color printer for under $1,000. To find out how
cool,
hot
it really is, visit Xerox.com/office.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman with you here live, coast to coast, border to border. You can drop into our chat room. Go to TomHartman.com and click on the chat link and involve yourself with one of the most erudite online conversations live in real time during the 3 hours of this program out there. Our archives, put together by Mike Toth, were recently updated. You can check those out, archives of pieces of previous programs, as well as the archives held by White Rose Society that go back. Also, you can listen to the web stream, if you wish, at radiopower.org. And we're on Sirius Satellite, stream 143, and radio stations from coast to coast. Our quote for the day, older men declare war, but it's the youth who must fight and die. President Herbert Hoover. And boy, is that the topic of the day. I mean, Sandy Berger is testifying before the panel right now, the 9/11 Commission. And the fellow who introduced the testimony started out by saying, we wanted Condoleezza Rice, your counterpart, to come in and testify, but the White House won't let her. The machine is just running full tilt boogie. I mean, you know, I can only call it the distortion machine. I don't know. For example, yesterday we had George Bush. Richard Clark had, he said what he said. They downgraded terrorism and they didn't, so George Bush had the following to say yesterday. Oh, hang on just a second. Here we got to push the right button.
George Tenet briefed me on a regular basis about the terrorist threats to the United States of America. And had my administration had any information that terrorists were going to attack New York City on September 11th, we would have acted.
Now, the key word there is New York City. Notice how carefully this gets parsed.
That terrorists were going to attack New York City on September 11th, we would have acted.
Now, you know, they didn't know, number one, that it was going to be New York City. In fact, the best guess was that it was going to be Washington, D.C. And they didn't know that it was September 11th. The best guess was it was sometime in August or September. And so, I mean, it's like, it's this incredible slicing and dicing of language that is just absolutely mind-boggling. Absolutely mind-boggling. The spinning that is going on. Scotty McClellan did the same thing yesterday. He went in front of the cameras, and he categorically denied that the president signed a directive in October of 2009. Now, here's the exchange. Question. This is from a reporter. He's right that, you know, speaking of Richard Clark, he's right that in October of 2001, when the president signed this directive, the president was directing the Pentagon to prepare plans for the invasion of Iraq. Now, keep in mind, the president actually signed the directive to prepare plans for the invasion of Iraq in September, right after 9/11, not in October, a month later. So the questioner is asking Scott McClellan, well, isn't it true what Clark said, that in October of 2001 the president signed this directive directing the Pentagon to prepare plans for the invasion of Iraq? Scott McClellan, well, that's why I said that's part of this revisionist history. Question, that's not true? Mr. McClellan, that's part of his revisionist history. That's what I'm saying. Question, are you saying it's not true? Mr. McClellan, yes, that's right, I am. Well, it is. It's not true that it was done in October. It was done a month before in September. Mr. McClellan, that's just his revisionist history, Clark, to make suggestions like that. He knows that at that point our focus was ongoing, was on Afghanistan and removing the Taliban and taking away the safe haven for Al-Qaeda. But literally what had happened, I mean, here you have the President of the United States, you know, slicing and dicing words to avoid speaking honestly, candidly. And you have his press secretary doing the same thing at the same time that they're saying, we're not going to allow Condoleezza Rice to testify under oath before the United States, before this commission that was actually brought into being by the pen of the president himself. I mean, here, Condoleezza Rice, despite discussing the issue repeatedly on all five morning talk shows, refuses to testify publicly before the committee. Why? Well, maybe because they would put her under oath. You can't be prosecuted for saying things on talk shows that are not true. We all have the right to lie, except when we're under oath. Could that be the reason? She claims the presidential advisors, reports the Center for American Progress, can't appear before Congress because of separation of powers concerns, but her argument does not withstand scrutiny. First, the 9/11 Commission is not a congressional committee, but it's an independent committee signing a law by a stroke of the president's pen. But even setting that aside, according to Commissioner Richard Veniste, and he said this again this morning when he brought in Sandy Berger, and a March 5th, 2002 Congressional Research Service report shows that there are, quote, many precedents involving presidential advisors testifying before congressional committees, including Lloyd Cutler, Zbigniew Brzezinski, Sandy Berger, and even John Podesta. All of these people who were advisors to the president, just like Condi Rice, who testified under oath before congressional committees or their equivalents. But this White House is not going to allow Condi Rice to go in there and testify. No siree, Bob. It is really quite remarkable. You know, there's a great old song. Yeah, I guess probably 60 or 70 years old to remember this in its first edition.
I'll never say never again, 'cause here I am in love again.
I think it came out in the 30s. In love again. And frankly, I don't remember who first did it. This is an edition that I'm playing today in a salute to the disinformation machine in the White House. This song was actually produced by the propaganda arm of Germany in 1940. And in just a second, you'll get the... Here we go.
Here is a new version sent to us by a disillusioned Englishman.
This
we
is...
never say never again again. Cause here we are at war again. Up to our necks in war again with you.
This is broadcast in England from Germany.
We'll never say never fight wars again. Cause here we are at war again. It's just the thing that Churchill made us do.
Yeah, Churchill made us do it during the bombing of London.
We thought to war we'd say goodbye. Cause war ain't fun and that's no lie. We like to live and we hate to die. But it's all up now and that too is no lie. We'll never say never again again. Cause here we are at war again. Up to our necks in war again. And we can't pull through.
And eventually they couldn't pull through. But here, you know, okay, so we got attacked. It was a Taliban. It was Bin Laden. And what do we do? In the weeks immediately after this, well, actually, we find out now, it goes all the way back to the very beginning of this administration. Let's go after Iraq. Why? Nobody knows. We know that, Clark says that Rumsfeld said, well, we need to go after Iraq because there's better targets there. That's kind of, you know, that's... You got Dick Cheney saying, you know, there's 10% of the world's oil there. That's significant. Yeah, that's a good point. And you got, you know, the amateur psychologist running around going, it's Bush trying to show up his daddy. And the reality is, we don't know yet. We don't know. It is one of the great mysteries. Hopefully we'll find out. With this report from the Center for American Progress, the counterterrorism chief Richard Clark set to testify. He's going to testify this afternoon during this program. President Bush defended himself against well-documented charges of negligence before 9/11, saying, had my administration had any information the terrorists were going to attack New York City. I played that clip for you just a minute ago. Here's the reality. Let me grab that clip one more time. Here we go. I think it's, you know, like for the record, it's important to get this.
George Tenet briefed me on a regular basis about the terrorist threats to the United States of America. And had my administration had any information that terrorists were going to attack New York City on September 11th, we would have acted.
Now, in fact, on August 6th of 2001, the president received a CIA warning headlined, quote, Bin Laden determined to strike in U.S., end quote. This was the headline on the CIA document that the president was handed on the 6th of August of 2001. It noted, and here's a quote from that briefing, a plot could include the hijacking of an American airplane, end quote. Additionally, the White House was warned in July of 2001 that al-Qaeda had considered using hijacked airliners as missiles. The Vice President, Dick Cheney, has even admitted this. 5 days after 9/11, he said, quote, there has been information coming in that a big operation was planned, end quote. Yet despite these warnings, the administration de-emphasized counterterrorism, never once convened its own counterterrorism task force, which was headed up by Dick Cheney. He was too busy putting together the 11 meetings of his energy task force to come up with the big subsidies that were going to go to the oil industry and the nuclear industry and on and on. Never once convened its own counterterrorism task force. Not once before 9/11. Threatened to veto bills diverting national missile defense funds into counterterrorism. Sandy Berger this morning said there was a 325%, as I recall, maybe it was 350%, increase in counterterrorism expenditures during the Clinton administration. Bush comes into office and they start cutting these funds and moving this money into national missile defense, which, of course, Donald Rumsfeld was the very well-paid lobbyist for the missile defense industry before becoming Secretary of Defense. That was the job he had. He was a lobbyist on Capitol Hill for the relatively large handful of very large, very wealthy military contractors who were doing the missile defense. And in addition, this administration terminated, a highly classified program to monitor al-Qaeda suspects in the United States and downgraded Clark's counterterrorism office within the White House. Well, yeah, of course, that's what he's upset about. 20 minutes past the hour. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the Tune Tracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the pro version. version with traffic interface and only $149.95 for the original Tune Tracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. You're listening to the True People's Radio, 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to call. Boy, the latest, the rant now is that Richard Clark released his book specifically to drop it into the election cycle. Of course, that could have been said about any time from now until November, which is quite a few months down the road, but turns out that's not quite the truth. We'll get to that right after we take this call. 1-866-889-8894. Dave in California is on the line. Hey, Dave, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, good morning, Tom. I've observed an interesting thing, which may be have a good side effect. It appears that most of right-wing radio is virtually out of action for the present because they've apparently made a decision to allow virtually every sexually insecure right-winger to call in effect, say, on national radio, I want the world to know that I am a very straight person and that I am opposed to gay marriages. And everybody says, hear, hear, and then they go to the next person who calls in and says essentially the same thing. Apparently everybody that needs to do this is going to be allowed to do it. It might take months and months.
Well, it's National Change the Subject Week declared by this administration. I mean, you have that, and you have Of God and the Flag. William Sapphire today wrote an op-ed piece in the New York Times in which he points out that, you know, In God We Trust was put on our coins in Lincoln's time, and Jefferson mentions the Creator in the Declaration of Independence and blah, blah, blah. And then he goes on, and in a surprising moment of candor for a conservative, I think Sapphire is actually a conservative who has some scruples. He says, the only thing this time-wasting pest Newdow, this is the guy who brought the lawsuit, has going for him is that he's right. And, you know, then he goes on to say in 1954, when One Nation Under God was inserted. It was inserted, of course, under pressure from the, what's the Catholic group? There you go. It was for Columbus Day, actually. In 1892, the thing was originally put together. It was the Knights of Columbus in 1954, and it was the main reason that it was put in there was to differentiate us from those godless communists in the Soviet Union who had officially outlawed God. And so this was our way of kind of thumbing our nose at them. But then Sapphire says, but the students should have the right to remain silent for a couple of seconds while others choose to say under God. I think that this is, I mean, Dukakis took the side of this sort of thing, and it just killed him. And so, you know, John Kerry's not going to do it. It would be political suicide. But I'm not running for office, and so I'll say I don't think that children in our schools should be required to affirm anything religious. Frankly.
No, particularly if they have a totally different perspective. They're being required to swear to something. You know, I would have only interrupted these 911 hearings for the Tom Hartman show. One of the thoughts there, too, that I think is going to go unsaid is that the Arab world has been furious with the United States now for some time, for good reasons, I believe. We've packed so much money into Israel and so destabilized the balance of power there.
Well, and I'd say mostly what we've done with Saudi Arabia, you know, propping up that repressive regime.
Well,
I've got 10 seconds, Dave.
What's that?
We've got 10 seconds.
I think the Arab world, I can't. Another time. Huh?
Okay. Well, you want to hang on over the break?
All right.
Okay, because we've got a break coming up here in 2 or 3 seconds. The music is going to begin. And, all right. I don't have a control over the time on these things. We have what I call hard breaks. We're ready to do. So hang on. We'll take you on the other side. This is the Tom Hartman radio program, 29 minutes past the hour, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Have you visited 100fires.com lately? If not, then you're missing out on thousands of books for a better world. Books about how you can make a difference, about the rights of workers, creating more livable communities, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. The offshoring avalanche continues. General Motors plans to slash the number of white-collar workers it employs domestically while shipping the jobs overseas. An internal GM memo says, quote, "In 2003, we began offshoring activities, moving $3.5 million of work to lower-cost locations, and we are planning to increase that to $48 million in 2004. On Monday, Michigan Governor Jennifer Granholm responded to the offshoring threat with two orders giving preferences for state contracts to firms that employ local workers.
The birthplace of the labor union that helped bring democracy to Poland and crack the Iron Curtain faces the wrecking ball courtesy of gentrification. The Solidarity Union got its start in the Gdansk shipyard during a strike in 1980. Now a U.S. developer owns nearly half of it and wants to turn it into a condo and shopping complex. The city's hesitant to see the yard and its 3,000 decent-paying jobs disappear. It supports an alternate redevelopment plan, which would augment the shipyard with affordable housing and new schools, as well as some sort of solidarity museum. The American developers are willing to sell the works back to the Polish, but only at a price several times its market value.
2,200 United Auto Workers union members in Indiana averted a strike this week, reaching a tentative deal with Guide Corporation, an auto parts supplier for General Motors. The five-year contract proposal preserves health and pension benefits and includes a $3,000 signing bonus. The deal was negotiated under a threat by GM to move to a cheaper offshore supplier unless workers submitted to what officials called a competitive agreement. A ratification vote is scheduled for later this week.
Politics in the workplace is growing, especially in corporate America. This year, 99 of the 150 largest companies in the country are conducting some form of voter registration program for their employees, up from less than 30 2 years ago. Tied into many of these are supplemental voter education efforts, which mostly consist of company-supplied information on candidates' voting records and positions on major issues. Specific company endorsements are forbidden, but the strategy seems to work. Research from the 2002 elections conducted by the Business Industry Political Action Committee boasts that among new voters who cast their ballots based on employer-supplied information alone, more than 60% selected the most business-friendly candidate in contested races.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Bush administration's new prescription drug benefits may make Medicare's finances sick. A report from the Medicare and Social Security Programs Trustees Fund found that the Medicare costs are now estimated to top $500 billion over 10 years. Unless action is taken to curb costs, the fund could become insolvent in 2019, 7 years earlier than forecast last year.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Oh. Gotta let the bumper music play.
You know this language.
There we go.
Latin and Greek.
We got new new they're called rejoiners, these things that bring us back from the breaks. Running them a little longer so that the local stations can drop a message in there. And it caught me. Anyhow, welcome back. It's Tom Hartman with you. 26 minutes before the hour. I can see, yesterday I stuck my foot in it. We got a call from Dave in Milwaukee, I think it was, in the third hour of the program, where he was saying that atheism was the answer, and I made the comment that I'd read the Bible several times and that, my personal experience was that there is something real to religion. And now I'm saying, but, we shouldn't say one nation under God and the pledge. And so I got all this email yesterday and nasty grams from people. Yeah, funny, on both sides, saying, are you cut off that atheist or you should, whatever. And I'm sure that it's going to continue. Anyhow, we were talking to Dave in California. Dave, you're back on.
What's so many up? Good points. I would certainly agree with that last one. I don't think that kids should be required to swear to something that they may or may not even believe in or know about. But
yeah, I don't mind if the Supreme Court opens their session by saying, God save the court or whatever they say. They're grown-up adults. They can make their own choices about those things. But anyway, and I think teaching religion should be in the home. We did it in our home. I think that the folks who are into promoting religion at the state level, all they need to do is think, well, now what would happen if Reverend Moon got a hold of this? Okay, one nation under Reverend Moon. I mean, because he has claimed that he's the reincarnation of Jesus Christ. He's here to finish Jesus' job. And, and he's got considerable power. He owns the Washington Times. He owns the United Press International, UPI, the news service. And he's got a lot of followers of, one of his followers, Tony Snow, I think he's, he worked for the Washington Times for some time. I don't know if he's actually a Mooney or not, but now he's on Fox News. So it's out there. What happens if these guys get a hold of, the deciding which God we've got to honor? Anyway, I'm ranting. You were, Dave, one final point. I got two other people on hold. I got to move on.
Okay, well, the point I was trying to make when I left is that I think in recent years the Saudis became aware of what Israel has known for a long time, that America has some of the finest politicians that money can buy.
Yeah.
So they thought if that's the way the game is played, they did leap into bed with the Bush team, which is not encumbered by a lot of integrities and loyalties. But
well, they've been in bed with the Bush team back into the late 60s when George Bush Sr. was a member of Congress, and before that when he was when he had Zapata Oil Company. I mean, this is a long-standing relationship. And also I'd say the same is probably true of the Egyptians. But good point, Dave.
I'll pursue it further at another time, but you have such a wonderful program. You are a hope for the country.
Thank you. It's very kind of you to say that. I appreciate it, and nice to hear your kind words. 23 minutes before the hour, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. The point I started to tell you about before, the reason why Richard Clark's book came out when it did, there's this huge right-wing conspiracy theory that, his book came out when it did because, it's the elections and he's going to spin the elections and there's these hearings going on, blah, 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 blah. Turns out that he wanted the book to come out in December. December, like 3 months ago. But because the book reveals national security information, it had to be vetted by the White House. And so the White House had to sit down and read through this book or somebody, some bureaucrat in the White House and make sure that he wasn't revealing secrets. I mean, when you've had a top secret security clearance and you publish your memoirs that have to do with the time that you were doing the job that had the security clearance, you've got to run it by those people so that they can say, whatever. And it turns out, here Richard Clark says, this book could have been published 3 months ago if the White House had let it. The White House sat on this book for 3 months as part of their security review of the text, and now they blame me that it's coming out in March. The book could have been out in December, which is what I wanted to do. I'm not trying to put it in the middle of the election. They put it in the middle of the election. The White House has also claimed that Clark has partisan motivations for releasing the book, despite the fact that he's a registered Republican, was originally appointed under Ronald Reagan, and served under three Republican presidents. Curiouser and curiouser. Kay in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Kay, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi. I have an answer to a question you posed a while back.
Okay.
Why did we go into Iraq?
Yes.
One word, globalization. Globalization of the oil industry, which the Bush, Cheney, etc., junta wants to control. If they can control it in Iraq, then the other oil-producing countries in the Middle East will realize that they better knuckle under if they want a win-win situation with the United States, and so globalization of the oil industry is the answer.
Yeah.
And the other thing I might provide an answer to is the Pledge of Allegiance, using the word God. This is an old, old, old technique first used by the church in early days of Christianity, and that is to displace rational issues with emotional issues.
Well,
this is what the administration is.
Yeah, what's happening right now? It's a variation on when George Herbert Walker Bush was running for president, and Bill Clinton was, you know, coming up behind him, and so he pulls out the burning the flag amendment. These are called wedge issues. Good point, Kay. Thank you for making it. I appreciate it. And in fact, I agree with you. And I've said it on this program before. I am of the opinion that it's actually a fairly complex thing. That these guys were faced with the fact that the United States consumes 25% of the planet's oil, and we can only produce about half of that ourselves, and what we can produce is going away. I mean, remember, it all started here. In 1867 was the year that Colonel Drake drilled the first oil well in Titusville, Pennsylvania. And the 1870s, the 1880s, the 1890s, there was this huge boom. There was oil wells in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and New York, and Ohio, and Indiana, and southern Michigan. All of them are dry now. We pumped them dry, and we started moving west. We got oil in Texas. We got oil in Oklahoma, all the way out to California. Got oil up in Alaska. The Alaskan oil, many of those wells are now dry. Many of the California wells are now dry. It's getting more and more expensive to suck the oil out of these things. And so, you know, Jimmy Carter looked at this situation and said, this is nuts. Our national security, I mean, literally our national security. I mean, you know, your bombers and ships and airplanes and things, they require oil. Our national security, our economy, our everything depends on this one single source of energy. And yet we are surrounded by sources of energy. The sun falls on the earth every single day. The wind blows every day. There's rivers flowing every day. There's biomass, you know, there's waste that we're producing that generates heat every day. There's all these different ways that we can produce electricity and energy. Why don't we promote them? And, of course, at the end of the Carter administration, Reagan's first official act of office was to remove Jimmy Carter's solar panels from the roof of the White House, and he stopped the whole thing of, you know, let's wear sweaters and turn down our thermostats and actually reversed legislation offering tax incentives to people who insulated their houses and things. And, you know, because he was beholden to the oil industry. He was brought into power in large part by the oil industry. And it's been that way ever since. In my opinion, Bill Clinton was not up to his neck as deep as Reagan and Bush, but you know, he had his hand in the cookie jar as well. This is what the Democratic Leadership Council is all about. You know, let's bring the corporations into the big tent. Yes, indeed, just what we need to do. And so I think you're right, Kay, and I'd say it's not just globalization and it's not just oil, but that's a piece of it. And so they said, okay, if we're going to depend on oil, and Bush Sr. said, you know, the American lifestyle is not negotiable, we've increased to $100,000 the tax deduction that you can take if you buy an SUV. Not a car. You can't get any tax deduction for a car. The vehicle has to weigh over 6,000 pounds to be considered a piece of equipment rather than a vehicle. And then you can get up to $100,000 tax deduction. This is the latest Bush tax bill. If you own a small business, and there's millions of small businesses in America, I'd say probably the majority of SUVs are owned indirectly as by small businesses in the United States, and people claim these deductions. And it's just incredible. If you're going to have an SUV culture and you're going to have an oil-driven culture, then you've got to have oil. And if you're going to have to have oil, and most of the world's oil is in the Middle East, then you got to camp out in the Middle East. You got to nail it down. You got to nail it down hard. And thus we see, you know, back in '98, so the Project for New American Century saying, you know, we need to take Iraq. They got the freshest oil, and this isn't the language that they used, of course, but it's the point that they were making. They've got the freshest oil, the easiest oil, let's get it. 1-866-889-8894. Chris in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Chris, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Well, hey, Tom. You know, I thought that Bush's response to the Clark book yesterday was very specific. He said if we knew that there was going to be an attack in New York, then we would have done something
on
about
September
it.
11th.
Yeah, if that takes care of New York on September 11th, did you have information prior in other places or perhaps in general? But nobody asked that question, of course.
Right.
Something that I think should be mentioned, because I think its importance has been muted because of the dog and pony show of the 9/11 Commission. I'm afraid that our Supreme Court is going to rule shortly that for the first time in the history of the Republic, Americans are going to be denied the right simply to be silent. You know, that government officials can,
You're talking about the guy
law,
who had to show his ID?
Yeah, you know, that can, well, not just show his ID, give his name. That government officials can, with the weight of law, compel you to speak when they wish you to. The man simply refused to speak, and he was arrested for that. And it's a very, very dangerous precedent if they rule the way I think they're going to.
Yeah, this is something that's very much worth paying attention to, Chris. I agree with you. And but you know, we don't know how the ruling's going to go yet.
No, so we don't. I'm very trepidatious with this Supreme Court.
Yeah, I am too. Chris, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. 15 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, and Steve in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Steve.
Hi, Tom. Yeah, that last caller had brought, you know, kind of mentioned a point I was going to talk about, and that was that Bush response to that question yesterday.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I opened the show with. Actually, was
yeah, you know, I missed the first few minutes of your show.
Yeah, I played the clip of George Bush saying it, and then we got what's his name, Scotty, in there going, you know, this is just this mythology. You know, he didn't sign an order to put together an attack against Iraq in October. Well, it turns out it was in September. So.
Mm-hmm. You know, the question that was asked of him wasn't really even that. It's kind of hard to hear those reporters in the background when they ask their questions, but the question just had to do with Clark. And Clark, as far as I know, I haven't read his book or anything, has not said that they knew anything. They asked him about a response to Clark's allegations that he didn't, you know, what he did before September 11th, and then his answer was, I didn't know anything about September 11th that was going to happen, you know?
Yeah.
That wasn't really even the question.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know,
interesting.
And you got Condoleezza Rice here basically taking the fifth, you know, the whole Bush administration taking the fifth on this September 11th thing. And, you know, it seems, you know, it's very fishy. And I think the right-wingers are very terrified that the clown they hitched their wagon to is going to be exposed, you know.
Well, it's certainly happening. I think the solace that they have is that a lot of American voters really don't start paying attention to politics until October, November. You know, it's there's the political junkies like you and me out there, and they're gonna, you know, just spin the thing as fast and as far as they can. So
yeah,
anyhow,
yeah,
Steve,
that's well, we'll see what happens, but
we definitely will.
Interesting every day.
Yep, Steve, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Great to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. The White House is making these claims. You know, the administration's talking point on its pre-9/11 policy, this is from the Center for American Progress, repeated by Secretary of State Colin Powell before the committee yesterday, was, quote, we wanted to move beyond the rollback policy of containment, criminal prosecution, and limited retaliation for specific terrorist attacks. We wanted to destroy al-Qaeda, end quote. National Security Advisor Condi Rice and White House Press Secretary Scott McClennan have made nearly identical statements. These, you know, they have carefully come up with their talking points. Oh, we wanted to do much more than the Clinton administration. The language is undoubtedly designed, says the Center for American Progress, to give the impression that top officials in the Bush administration wanted to be more aggressive than Richard Clark, who presented the administration with plans to aggressively target al-Qaeda. But the administration's actual plan, according to a report released by the 9/11 Commission yesterday, was actually quite meek. For example, here's some facts. On September 10th, the White House was not ready to counter the Taliban. After 8 months of intermittent deliberations, subordinate officials in the Bush administration's National Security Council, the deputies, determined that the appropriate first step was dispatching an envoy to give the Taliban an opportunity to expel bin Laden and his organization. That was a quote. Only if that failed would, quote, pressure be applied on the Taliban diplomatically, and the administration would begin to encourage, quote, anti-Taliban attacks on al-Qaeda bases, end quote. Only if both those strategies failed would the administration consider more direct action. According to Stephen Hadley, the Deputy National Security Advisor, this is Condi Rice's assistant, quote, the time frame for this strategy was about 3 years, end quote. In other words, had 9/11 not happened and caused these guys to sit up and take notice, it would be about now that the Bush team would be reacting to the intelligence that Sandy Berger handed to Condoleezza Rice when the transition happened in January of 2001. In the meantime, the White House yesterday claimed it was preparing to apply serious pressure to the Taliban in 2001, but actually, you remember this? They gave $43 million to the Taliban that year. It was part of a program to stop poppy growing. Now, you could say that's laudable, but hey, it's $43 million to the Taliban. That's a little different from declaring war on them, don't you think? Just a wee bit. Interesting things on Medicare, by the way. I want to just touch briefly on this. I'll share this with you. This is a remarkable situation with Medicare. I'll tell you right after this break. Stay tuned. This is Tom Hartman.
Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America. Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, pal. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today, or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Humans are reshaping planet Earth through an interlocking web of environmental impacts. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Rising temperatures and melting glaciers are signs of climate change, but Will Steppen, co-author of Global Change in the Earth System, says that's just one of many global impacts humans are causing.
That's the changing chemistry in the atmosphere, changing chemistry in the ocean, land cover change, changing biological complexity, and by that I mean not only biodiversity, but also invasive species, and the homogenization of the biosphere by moving common plants and animals around.
Steppen's book focuses on how all these global changes affect each other.
10-15 years ago, we tended to look at climate as a problem. We tended to look at biodiversity as a problem. We tended to look at air pollution as a problem, and the ozone hole, and so on. But as we study them, we're beginning to understand that the causes and consequences of these are very complex, and they actually intersect with each other, and that's the critical thing.
Steppen says the relationship between biodiversity and climate is one example of these types of complex interactions.
Obviously, there's a big intersection between climate and biodiversity. If climate starts changing too rapidly, it's going to have a big impact on biodiversity. We also know that land use change also affects climate.
Steppen says his book tries to put the different pieces of global change together to understand the Earth's environment as a whole. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Vengeful aspects became suspect and bending low as if to hear. Well, in the armies who ceased advancing because the people held their ear. Well, in the shepherds.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Senator Edward Kennedy said the Bush administration's inept management of the economy and its sweetheart deals for the pharmaceutical industry and the insurance industry are bringing Medicare closer to the brink. You know, keep in mind the new Medicare bill that this administration has taken millions of your and my tax dollars to design and produce a TV ad about. And come up with a toll-free number that people can call and you know, just basically hyping this thing. Yes, it's a good thing. Don't worry about it. Turns out it's going to cost $150 billion more than they projected. And why? Because the drug companies are jacking their prices up. This is not additional benefits that Medicare recipients are going to get. Now, this is additional money that the drug companies and the hospitals, the HMOs, are going to get. Looking for the lower prices, the White House has promised as part of its drug discount card program, too late. The Wall Street Journal reports many savings have already eroded with the drug industry racing to jack up prices. They're doing what department stores used to do when I was a kid. Maybe they still do it. I don't know. I haven't been paying that much attention. But when I was a kid, I remember, you know, in around September, October, prices would start to kind of creep up so that in November, when Christmas buying season came along, they'd slash the prices on things and put them on sale and they're back down to their normal price. Or maybe they'd go up 20% and then they'd drop them 30%, right? So it's actually a 10% discount. Well, the drug companies are doing that right now, according to the Wall Street Journal. Here's a quote. The prices of many widely used drugs have surged since President Bush first proposed a Medicare drug discount card in mid-2001. End quote. That from the Wall Street Journal. In fact, quote, prices for drugs the elderly use most often climbed nearly 3.5 times faster on average than the overall inflation rate between January 2002 and January 2003. They are getting ready. Yes, they are going to give the elderly a discount after they have raised the prices 3.5 times faster. And the inflation rate.
Square.
It's mind-boggling, my friends. Time for a change in the United States. Time for democracy. This is Tom Hartman.
It's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he that... Nureyev. Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs? Sure about that? Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know... One small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he a guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by America.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. Former White House counterterrorism expert Richard Clark accused the Bush administration on Tuesday of going on the offensive against him to divert attention from the truth that the administration did virtually nothing about al-Qaeda prior to September 11, 2001. Clark, author of the newly released book Against All Enemies, also said the administration focused on alleged Iraqi ties to the terrorist attacks, while there was no evidence that Saddam Hussein's dictatorship was involved. Clark said the White House is papering over facts such as in the weeks immediately after 9/11, the president signed a national security directive instructing the Pentagon to prepare for the invasion of Iraq, even though they knew at the time that Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11. Members of the federal panel that's been looking into 9/11 say they're not hearing from everyone they want to hear from. The panel has opened 2 days of hearings on the anti-terrorism efforts of the Bush and Clinton administrations before 9/11. The 10-member panel had invited National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice to testify. She declined, with the White House citing concerns about separation of powers. Former Democratic Congressman Timothy Raymer noted that Rice has been featured in the media disputing the claims in Richard Clark's book Against All Enemies. He suggests that the debate shouldn't be played out in the media, but before the panel. Top Democrats stepped up their attacks on George W. Bush's credibility on Tuesday, accusing the White House of abuses of power and trying to squelch dissent and bad news on a range of fronts. They recalled moves to discredit former Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill, who questioned Bush's Iraq policy in a book in January, and the leaking of the identity of CIA operative Valerie Plame when her husband, former diplomat Joseph Wilson, accused Bush of hyping pre-war intelligence on Iraq. Senate Democratic Leader Tom Daschle of South Dakota said, "We are seeing abuses of power that cannot be tolerated. The president needs to put a stop to it right now. We need to get to the truth, and the president needs to help us do that." More news after this.
Military veterans deserve better. They must wait endlessly for basic health care from the Department of Veterans Affairs. If you or a military veteran you know is one of the many heroes waiting for VA health care, the American Legion wants to tell your story to your elected officials in Washington, D.C.
Visitors to a zoo in eastern India have been banned from laughing after a state politician said he found it offensive. It happened after members of a local laughter club visited the Sanjay Gandhi Botanical Garden and Zoo in Patna. The politician became angry when he saw the group laughing while he was walking past the director's office. After ordering them to stop laughing, he issued instructions to a zoo official banning laughter at the zoo. For Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Have you been chipped yet? A company called Applied Digital Solutions wants you to undergo a surgical procedure to implant a tiny RFID microchip in your arm. Why would you want to do this? Because radio frequency ID chips will eliminate the heavy burden of having to carry credit cards and remember your ATM numbers. Instead, your arm becomes your card and ID number. Simply run your arm under a scanner and your embedded radio chip sends a digital signal to the computer, allowing you to complete your transaction. ADS calls its microchip VeriPay. There's only one rational reason that ADS executives think we'll submit to this. They're insane. Insane, but serious. They insist that this technological leap is needed because many people lose their credit cards. VeriPay solves that problem, says a corporate PR flack, cheerfully noting that ADS's chip is subdermal and very difficult to lose. You don't leave it sitting in the back seat of a taxi, he said. Subdermal or not, your ID number still can be stolen by a geeky thief who rigs up a device to intercept your radio-transmitted number, then plays it back later to your ATM machine, emptying your account. If your number is stolen, or if you simply switch credit card companies or banks, what are you to do? No problem, says the PR guy. If you don't want it anymore, you can go to a doctor and have it removed. I call it an opt-out feature, he said gaily. Swell. Instead of simply calling your credit card company to cancel your card, you'd have to call a surgeon. This is progress. Still, ADS is banking on you to get chipped, as they cheerily put it, even offering a $50 discount to the first 100,000 people who sign up. This is Jim Hightower saying, by the way, the honchos of ADS are such business geniuses that the company's stock plummeted from $12 a share 3 years ago to about 40 cents today. I wouldn't entrust two bits to them, much less my arm.
What do you know? Someone's at the door. Hello?
Oh, no, a runaway lawnmower. It's going for the shag carpet.
A runaway lawnmower. That's one thing you don't want in your house. One thing you do want in your house is a tougher, more impact-resistant floor with Plitanium plywood from Georgia-Pacific. Plitanium is better at withstanding the occasional dropped bowling ball or frozen turkey than building materials made of wood strands glued together. Plitanium plywood. Build it better.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Back to the Truth Arena here, the Tom Hartman radio program. Broadcasting live, coast to coast, border to border, on radio stations from California to North Carolina. Beaming down from outer space in the Sirius satellite radio system, streaming around the planet from radiopower.org. With archives at whiterosesociety.org. Our program brought to you today by Small Dog Electronics, smalldog.com, and the organic wine company, ecowine.com. 8 minutes past the hour, we're very pleased to have. This is the topic of the day. I mean, what is going on with terrorism? We just had an hour conversation here about, you know, Condi Rice. So let's get an expert in on this. David Barsamian is the author of two books on this: Culture and Resistance, interviews with Edward Said, and Terrorism, Theirs and Ours, the co-author of both books. And, David, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be on.
Thanks. How come Condi Rice won't testify?
Gee, I don't know. Maybe she has something to hide. It's very suspicious. And for those of us old enough to remember the Watergate hearings, you know how carefully testimony was manipulated as well as witnesses. And it just gives the appearance that she knows something that the Bush administration does not want the American people to hear.
For example?
Now, what can that be? I mean, there are numerous things. Perhaps she has information as to why the bin Laden family members, up to two dozen of them, as well as what I now understand to be something like 100 or 125 influential Saudis, were flown out of the United States in the week after the September 11th attacks without ever being interrogated by the CIA or the FBI. Maybe she knows something
about
that.
It was a great airlift. I mean, this was a great humanitarian thing. These people were going to be persecuted by Americans who were all upset that nasty Arabs had bombed the World Trade Center. I mean, wasn't this just a wonderful humanitarian? How come no? This, you know, that hasn't even been raised yet in these commission hearings.
It's not going to be raised.
Why not?
A number of things you will never hear, nor will the American people hear about.
Why not?
I'll give you another example. John O'Neill was the career FBI agent in New York, and after the first attack on the World Trade Center in 1993, he became the head of, it wasn't called this, but in fact it was the bin Laden Al-Qaeda desk at the FBI offices in New York. This guy is a through-and-through professional cop, an FBI agent for most of his life. He developed leads that all led directly to Saudi Arabia.
Right, and he's the guy who resigned in disgust and went to work at the World Trade Center, right?
And there's actually a very good documentary on this that Frontline did, to its credit, and there's also a book on it as well. It's not controversial. It's very well known.
There's actually a website. Isn't it called rememberjohn.org or .com, something like that?
There may be one.
Yeah.
But let me just finish with O'Neill.
Sure.
Every single time he developed information that showed a connection to the 1993 attack on the Trade Center in New York that showed a connection to Saudi Arabia, when he took that information to his superiors, he was told, quote, don't go there, national security.
Yeah.
Well, he did. As you said, he got so fed up, he got so disgusted, that he quit, and sadly he became the head of security in the World Trade Center and was killed in the September 11th attacks. That's not going to come out. The whole Saudi Arabia is the elephant in the closet. It's the country that no one will talk about. And I think that's what's not, you know, if we really had an open commission, this would be the focus, the funding for Saudi Arabia, and then the political protection that the United States has provided for Saudi Arabia. I don't need to remind you and your listeners that 15 of the 19 hijackers were from Saudi Arabia. These were not some, you know, illiterate kids from the mountains somewhere or from a refugee camp. These were middle class, mostly educated, and also quite, you know, in terms of terrorists, quite old. You know, usually terrorists are very young. So why is the commission not focusing on that? That is because the Bush administration, particularly through the Carlyle Group, which is a very influential financial organization in which Bush's father, George Herbert Walker Bush, is a principal, as is former Secretary of State Baker, as is British Prime Minister John Major, as is CIA Director and Defense Department Chief Frank Carlucci, and many others. They are into it up to their necks in financial connections with Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, here's the website for John O'Neill is in fact rememberjohn.com. I'm looking at it right now, and it lays out some really startling stuff. Anyhow, we're talking with David Barsamian. David, you have a website with information about your books.
Yes, it's alternativeradio.org. Alternative radio, one word.
Right.
.org.
Okay, great. And
I'm very disappointed in this commission. I really expected a lot more. Maybe I'm naive, but the line of questioning is so timid. They're so servile and obsequious. Just to give you one example, a CIA director, Tennant, was on this morning.
Right.
You know, he was introduced in these most glowing terms, you know, very grandiloquent about his great service to the country. I'm sorry, this guy should have been fired.
Yeah.
You know, years ago. I mean, if you or I or someone listening to this program, creates a major mistake, a huge blunder, there are consequences for that. Ordinary people face consequences. Apparently, these people not only stay in office and collect their huge salaries and, you know, are looking forward to pensions, but they actually get promoted. Not a single person involved in September 11th in the so-called intelligence community, which is funded to the tune of $30 billion that we know about by the taxpayers of this country, not one person has been fired or even demoted, for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just... It's simply unacceptable.
So, David, we're talking with David Barsamian, the co-author of Terrorism, Theirs and Ours, and Culture and Resistance. Why do you think we invaded Iraq?
Well, that's an entirely different issue right now. Iraq has been in the gun sights of the neocons. This is a group of former Democrats who became conservatives and hawks during the early Reagan administration. They then went on to form a group called the Project for a New American Century.
Right.
You can look them up on the net, Project for a New American Century, and look at their documents. They started producing them in 1992. Iraq has always been in their crosshairs. Iraq has always been in their gun sights. They have wanted, this is payback. And when they got a president who was selected in 2000, they had what they needed. They had political power, and they wanted to implement their program to invade and occupy Iraq. And so I think there are a couple of things going on. One is, obviously, Iraq has oil. I mean, if it had grapefruits or bananas, do you think the United States would have invaded and occupied it?
Well, not in this century.
I could say. No. I'll dare a guess and say probably not. But the other thing that's going on here is the demonstration effect. Because what the U.S. is doing now is showing Europe, China, crucially, and Japan, look, we're boss, you watch out, we're sitting on the oil gaskets, we're sitting on the oil wells, and you listen when we say, when we speak, you obey. So this has a demonstration effect. The U.S. has now inserted a massive military force in Iraq, which will be there for years to come. They will have bases there. The entire Middle East is now virtually an extension of Fort Hood, Texas. It's a gigantic military base. The same is true of Central Asia, where all the five republics of the former Central Asia are now the sites of U.S. military bases, including Afghanistan and Pakistan as well. And so this is what the neocons wanted. This is what who are they? Let me name some names, okay? Some of them are probably not known to your listeners, like John Bolton and Scooter Libby and Douglas Fife and Zalmay Khalilzad and people like that. But the ones who are known are Rumsfeld, Cheney, and Wolfowitz, and Elliot Abrams, who's the head of the Middle East desk at the National Security Council. So this group of hardliners, really radical nationalists, as Noam Chomsky calls them, hell-bent on imperial violence, are at the levers of power in Washington. These are not some theoreticians now writing papers in 1992 about overthrowing and occupying Iraq. They are in the position to do extremely violent and dangerous things, and they've been doing them. And so I think that goes a long way to understanding what was behind U.S. policy in Iraq. I read Dick Clark's book in a couple of hours. It's a very quick read. It's very persuasive. I think we have to listen to someone like Clark, who is testifying today. The name of his book is called Against All Enemies. He's a 30-year veteran of the government. He served Reagan. He served Bush 1. He served Clinton. I mean, this guy is a career civil servant. And someone like Chuck Hagel, the senator, Republican senator from Nebraska, no left-winger or progressive, he said, we have to listen to someone like Clark. He is a serious man, and the Bush administration must reply in a serious way to the allegations that Clark is making, the principal one being that they totally ignored the threat of Al-Qaeda, which was real, and totally focused on the so-called threat of Saddam Hussein, which was unreal.
Right. Now, we're talking with David Barsamian, the author of Terrorism, Theirs and Ours, and Culture and Resistance, his website, alternativeradio.org. David, in the 2 minutes we have left in the program here, or in this segment, I want to ask you to put on the hat, step inside the head of Paul Wolfowitz or Dick Cheney. Why are these guys advancing this agenda? What positive outcome in their mind for the United States or for themselves or whatever? What positive outcome are they? They're not evil people. I mean, very few of us.
We don't
know
that, Tom. So I'm not even going to characterize whether they're good or evil. We only have their performance and their, work.
Well, the Project for a New American Century lays out a lot of their motives pretty clearly on their website, newamericancentury.org.
I mean, blueprint for Pax Americana. Yeah. It is a blueprint for a very aggressive, militarized, let me underline that, militarized foreign policy in which all strategic objectives are reduced to a military outcome.
Right, it's a reinvention of the Roman Empire.
They can, but they'll use military force because the United States has no competitor in terms of the military. So they are imperialists.
So very quickly, David, before we run out of time here, why is that bad?
Why is that bad? Because the moral degradation to all of us, the enormous financial costs, the enormous human costs that we are invading and occupying countries that are not threatening the United States. We need to defend our country, not offend it by occupying countries that do not threaten us.
Okay, great. David Barsamian, thank you very much for being with us, the author, co-author of Terrorism, Theirs and Ours, www.alternativeradio.com. David, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, have a good one. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program. 1-866-889-8894. 20 minutes past the hour. Stay tuned.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available at bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Hi, this is Emily Richards for RAD, Recording Artists, Actors, and Athletes Against Drunk Driving. One person's negligence shattered my life in a single instant. You see, my little sister Annie was killed by a drunk driver. Please remember those you love. Friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the Tune Tracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the pro version with traffic interface and only $149.95 for the original Tune Tracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. Exposing the con and conservative. It's Tom Hartman. Did you see this ad in the New York Times? If you subscribe to it or you get it, the Agence France-Presse is writing about it. They're taking note of it in Europe. This full-page ad that was run in the New York Times at the end of last week. Paid for by a U.S. business group, a group of American business leaders. It's called Business Leaders for Sensible Priorities. It was founded back during the Clinton administration. On their concern that federal government spending priorities were undermining national security. I mean, this is the CEOs of the 500 members of this group, or the people who are among the 500 members of this group, include the former CEOs of Bell Industry, Eastman Kodak, Goldman Sachs. Some serious, heavy hitters here. They took out a full-page ad in the New York Times last week. And it says, the Bush's case for the invasion, quote, was built entirely out of falsehoods, end quote. Highlighting the cost, this is what the Agence France-Presse says, highlighting the cost of the war in terms of hundreds of U.S. casualties and tens of billions of dollars, the ad said the state-sponsored deception underpinning the conflict dwarfed the damage caused by the series of corporate scandals that recently rocked Wall Street. Now, here's the exact quotes from the ad. It's past time for finger-pointing. It's time for someone in the government to step forward and take personal responsibility for the deadly deceptions used to mislead this great nation into war. And that someone must be George W. Bush. This is a group of CEOs, business CEOs, former CEOs of Bell Industries, Eastman Kodak, Goldman Sachs, saying somebody's got to take responsibility for an invasion that, quote, was built entirely out of falsehoods. And who should take responsibility? These CEOs are saying, hey, it should be the CEO. Should be. Makes sense to me. 1-866-889-8894. And Kim in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Kim.
Yes, sir.
What's up?
Listen, 2 points.
1 through 40 slip, if you listen to President Bush talk sometimes, he'll say, we learned our lesson. America will never be caught on guard. And if you stop and think about it, he learned his lesson. He didn't pay attention when people warned him.
Yeah, actually, yes, you're right.
Yeah, number two, I was talking to a friend of mine who's a staunch Republican, and he turned around and he says, you know, George Bush did fulfill his National Guard duty. And I asked him, I said, what do you mean by that? He says, y'all remember that airplane ride he took to that carrier where he was allowed to steer it? He said, by God, that completed his National Guard duty right there.
That's great. That's great. You know, there's a lot of guys in Iraq right now. You know, he was allowed out. He was let out of the National Guard 5-6 months early because he wanted to go to the Yale Business School. And there's like a lot of guys in Iraq right now who are asking, hey, can I get out, let out early to go to the Iraq to the Yale Business School? I don't think they're buying it anymore though.
Hey, one more thing.
Yeah.
I don't know when exactly this was, but I know that it was during that time period. You know, I remember seeing a picture of him, quote, piloting a cigarette boat in one of these races. So when other boys were over there dying, he was doing that.
Well, that's, you know, he was down there on the coast, the Atlantic coast, campaigning for his father's friend. And you know, that's just what you do. Kim, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Great to hear from you. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program. When we come back, did the task force meet? The terrorism task force? What's really going on? What is Dick Clark and Richard Clark going to be saying this afternoon? Stick around.
Hi, I'm Joe Perry.
I'm Steven Tyler from Aerosmith. Here for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Yeah, you know we love it when the music does the talking.
And you know, the music stops when someone gets killed.
So never, 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 never let someone you know get behind the wheel if they've been drinking.
And they don't have to be plastered to kill someone. Even one or two drinks can impair your judgment and change your life forever.
So keep it real, keep it real. Friends, don't let friends drive drunk.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. The offshoring avalanche continues. General Motors plans to slash the number of white-collar workers it employs domestically while shipping the jobs overseas. An internal GM memo says, quote, in 2003, we began offshoring activities, moving $3.5 million of work to lower-cost locations. And we are planning to increase that to $48 million in 2004. On Monday, Michigan Governor Jennifer Granholm responded to the offshoring threat with two orders giving preferences for state contracts to firms that employ local workers.
The birthplace of the labor union that helped bring democracy to Poland and crack the Iron Curtain faces the wrecking ball courtesy of gentrification. The Solidarity Union got its start in the Gdansk shipyard during a strike in 1980. Now a U.S. developer owns nearly half of it and wants to turn it into a condo and shopping complex. The city's hesitant to see the yard and its 3,000 decent paying jobs disappear. It supports an alternate redevelopment plan, which would augment the shipyard with affordable housing and new schools, as well as some sort of solidarity museum. The American developers are willing to sell the works back to the Polish, but only at a price several times its market value.
2,200 United Auto Workers union members in Indiana averted a strike this week, reaching a tentative deal with Guide Corporation, an auto parts supplier for General Motors. The 5-year contract proposal preserves health and pension benefits and includes a $3,000 signing bonus. The deal was negotiated under a threat by GM to move to a cheaper offshore supplier unless workers submitted to what officials called a competitive agreement. A ratification vote is scheduled for later this week.
Politics in the workplace is growing, especially in corporate America. This year, 99 of the 150 largest companies in the country country are conducting some form of voter registration program for their employees, up from less than 30 2 years ago. Tied into many of these are supplemental voter education efforts, which mostly consist of company-supplied information on candidates' voting records and positions on major issues. Specific company endorsements are forbidden, but the strategy seems to work. Research from the 2002 elections conducted by the Business Industry Political Action Committee boasts that among new voters who cast their ballots based on employer-supplied information alone, more than 60% selected the most business-friendly candidate in contested races.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Bush administration's new prescription drug benefits may make Medicare's finances sick. A report from the Medicare and Social Security Programs Trustees Fund found that the Medicare costs are now estimated to top $500 billion over 10 years. Unless action is taken to curb costs, the fund could become insolvent in 2019, 7 years earlier than forecast last year.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
As we boarded a Greyhound in Pittsburgh, Michigan seems like a dream to me now. It took me 4 days to hitchhike from Saginaw. I've come to look for America. Laughing on the bus.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, speaking from behind the good old working-class stainless steel microphone, high up in the Green Mountains of the People's Republic of Vermont, broadcasting live coast-to-coast, 26 minutes before the hour. The administration, some things to keep in mind when you listen to the right-wing spin on this stuff. The administration has defended its negligence in the face of pre-9/11 terror warnings by claiming that it set up a counterterrorism task force in May of 2001. I've heard this three or four times. We set up a task force in May of 2001, before 9/11. We set up a counterterrorism task force. We put Dick Cheney in charge of it. Yep, true enough. But it never actually met. You can find that on whitehouse.gov website. Here's another one. The administration is simultaneously claiming that it never downgraded counterterrorism. Oh, we didn't downgrade counterterrorism. We took it all seriously. At the same time that it's trying to discredit Richard Clark by noting that the White House downgraded his counterterrorism office from the cabinet-level position it occupied under the Clinton administration to simply being, you know, basically reporting to somebody in the cabinet. Now, we didn't downgrade counterterrorism. Well, you know, that guy's just upset because we downgraded his job. It makes your head spin, you know. The administration is denying Richard Clark's assertion that Iraq planning took place immediately on 9/11, despite reports on CBS News, on ABC News, and many other sources corroborating the account, that were never challenged at the time. I mean, this is immediately after this. The administration tried to downgrade and slash funds for counterterrorism before 9/11, a significant departure from the previous administration, the Clinton administration, who labeled counterterrorism a tier one priority in its strategic plan. It dropped out of that tier when George Bush came into office. The Clinton administration had increased the counterterrorism budget by 13.6% in 1999, 7.1% in 2000, and 22.7% in 2001. And then the Bush administration came along and said, wait a minute, we don't want all that money spent on counterterrorism. We need it spent on Star Wars. It's really just quite remarkable. I'm not sure I want to flog this horse very much longer here. We've got a whole pile of stuff here about Richard Clark, but I want to move along a little bit. The military vote for Bush. The question here is: the Bush campaign in trouble? Are the wedge culture issues enough to save them? I'm frankly very skeptical. Your thoughts are, you're welcome to chime in. 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like. When the Bush campaign asked James McKinnon, this is an article by William Douglas that was in the Detroit Free Press, to co-chair its Veterans Steering Committee in New Hampshire, a job he held in 2000, the 56-year-old Vietnam veteran respectfully but firmly said no. This is James McKinnon, the guy who in 2000 had been the head in the George Bush 2000 campaign of the New Hampshire Veterans Program, get veterans out to vote for George Bush. They came back to him a couple months ago. And here's McKinnon, who served two tours in Vietnam with the Coast Guard. He said, and I quote, "I basically told him I was disappointed in his support of veterans. He's killing the active duty military. Look at the reserve call-ups for Iraq, the hardships, the National Guard, the state militias being used improperly. I took the president at his word on Iraq, and now you can't find a single report to back up or substantiate weapons of mass destruction," end quote. This being said by the Republican who was the head of the Bush 2000 campaign, the Veterans for Bush 2000 campaign in the state of New Hampshire at the time of those pivotal primaries. Is he in trouble with veterans? He's trying, he's called himself a war president. That's what he said to Leslie Stahl. "Leslie, I'm a war president. You got to remember." But is the military going to go along with it? A bipartisan poll of 1,000 likely voters conducted in September found that Bush's approval rating among relatives of military personnel, people who have somebody on active duty, what percentage of them support George Bush? 36%. I think, it's starting to look like John Kerry's going to, and he hasn't, John Kerry's been on vacation all this week, which I think is wise. I don't think that it's the time to politicize these things, at least for the presidential candidate. Leave it to people like Teddy Kennedy to do it. But now you've got these groups like Military Families Speak Out. This is a group that just, has appeared in the last couple of years. It's an anti-war group of relatives of deployed troops. They plan to observe the Iraq War's first anniversary. This is where it plans to. They did it last week with a procession outside Dover Air Force Base in Delaware, where the bodies of dead soldiers are returned, and at Walter Reed Army Hospital in Washington, where the wounded soldiers are treated. Of course, they're still not allowed to see the coffins, the families of the military. They're still not allowed to visit the wounded. But they demonstrated. 20 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Philip in Tampa has called 1-866-889-8894. Hey, Philip, welcome to the program.
Yeah, how you doing?
Great. What's up?
This is going to make your day. The newest propaganda that they're putting out on television and stuff against Kerry is that Kerry would have imposed a 50-cent a gallon tax on gasoline. It's like this ad must have been created when gasoline was $1.25 a gallon instead of $2.25 a gallon.
Well, he's got a 20-year voting record in the Senate. I mean, they're going to be able to basically say just about anything about.
Well, I tell you something. Gas prices are at record highs, and they're going to go higher. And this is all under the Cheney energy policy.
Yeah.
I mean, how are they going to blame? And they're going to try to blame the $2.50 a gas on something that he voted for that never happened. This is amazing. I mean, when you look at every category of life in this country, this administration has failed on every one of them, from permitting an attack on the United States, given that they had the biggest military budget. That's one thing that no one ever puts out. despite the B-1 bombers, the B-2 bombers, the stealth bombers, the stealth this, all the submarines and all the Army and the Marines and all the military, that this guy and the 38,000 people at the NSA, despite the huge military, the biggest military, the biggest surveillance organization in the world has ever seen, he still failed at keeping the country safe.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really tragic. Now, do you think, Phil? Let's cut the guy some slack here for a second. Do you think that if Bill Clinton had been president on 9/11, 9/11 would have happened? You still there?
Yeah, I'm thinking.
Yeah.
I'm not going to give you a quick answer.
Yeah.
I think we would have responded differently. Okay, you know that the guy, I think his name is Beamer, had the opportunity to have a conversation with his wife and the operator while they were on that jet.
Yeah,
what I'm saying here is, you know, this didn't all happen. All these four planes didn't happen in 1 second.
Yeah.
Yet there was no scrambling of the aircraft. Nothing went up to see what was going on. Bush continued sitting in that third grade class in Sarasota for another 20 minutes. I don't think if Clinton was sitting in a third grade class and the Secret Service came out and said New York has just been attacked, I don't think he would have sat there for another 20 minutes.
Well,
again,
to give him credit, maybe he thought it was just a tragic airline accident, but
I still would get up and leave. It's not that important. I got news for you. If someone came in to that same third grade classroom and told the teacher that her Chevrolet was demolished by a garbage truck out in the parking lot, she would have been out in that parking lot in 2 minutes.
Yeah. Well, here's my take on it, Philip, at two levels. Number one, we know now from Richard Clark's book, and not just him. I mean, he's about the 17th person now to be saying basically the same thing. We now know going all the way back to Thielman, a year ago, who resigned as a matter of conscience. We now know that this administration basically took terrorism off the table when they came in. Sandy Berger said to Condi Rice in that transition meeting in January of 2001, Bin Laden is, you're going to spend more time on Al-Qaeda than anything else. Bin Laden's got to be your number one priority. We've got a plan to take him out. You need to follow through on it. We could have done it in the last month. We chose not to because I'm not quoting him, but paraphrasing. We chose not to because we didn't want to hand you a war. But you can start right now, right this minute, and you can go after this guy. And instead, they demoted it in priority. So number one, I suspect that if the daily cabinet meetings and Richard Clark, the counterterrorism czar, had remained at the cabinet level, if these daily cabinet meetings had continued in the Bush administration, where every single day those members of the cabinet, the head of the FBI, the head of the CIA, the head of the NSA, had to go back every day and say to their people, what do you have? What do you have? What do you have? You wouldn't have had Colleen Rowley out there in the FBI going, nobody's listening to me. Her voice would have been
right.
heard, and I think we may have stopped 9/11. Number
that's
one,
right.
that's the first point. And secondly, I think we would have responded to it differently. We had the world in our hands, and Bill Clinton certainly knew how to work a crowd. You know, he would have said, great, we've got the world on our side. Let's turn this into something positive, and Bill Clinton and George Bush just completely blew this thing.
You know what this is the equivalent to in business? Let's say, the director of product management at Sony is leaving the company, and a new guy is coming on, and he says, now the future is DVD. We're going to be, that's where the industry is. I know you've got a 20-year background in videotape recorders, but now DVD is, that's really where it's at. And the guy leaves, and the first project he instigates is to change the color on the VCRs and to do other stuff.
Yeah. Now,
when
these
the guy
guys
was told, that's old business, we're not doing that anymore.
Right, yeah.
It's obsolete.
Yeah, these guys came in, and their first agenda was Iraq and Star Wars, which is where they were at when Bush number one left. Good point, Philip. I appreciate the call. Thank you very much. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. And David in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Hello, Tom. I have three little items here that are rumor to me, and I'm wondering if you can substantiate them. Your last caller said something about no planes got scrambled.
Yeah, well, not immediately, anyway.
Yeah.
There was a long delay.
I remember that, like, about 2 weeks before 9/11, they changed the protocol on what it took to scramble a plane, and that it had to go through Rumsfeld, and that he was unavailable for about an hour and a half.
Yeah, I can't substantiate or corroborate. You know, I don't know. What I do know is that they were doing exercises that morning where they were simulating an attack with a hijacked aircraft and an attack on the United States. You know, clearly this was something that they knew was a possibility. And you know, if I wanted to give them credit and say, well, you know, here's how they screwed up and why, my imagination would be that when the first reports came in that that these planes had hit the World Trade Center, that the people responsible thought it was a simulation. That, you know, that they didn't have CNN in their I mean, they're in these closed cubbies. Now, I don't have any idea. I mean, you know, trying to give them the absolute benefit of the doubt. That's as far as I can stretch it, you know. But anyway.
That's a good cover.
Yeah. Might
and
be.
I'm forgetting my second one, but my third one is I heard on another radio show yesterday that the strongest juice that the Bush administration has against Clark so far is that they've now unearthed a public statement that he made and was in the newspapers, I believe, in 1999, where he indeed said that Al-Qaeda was connected to Iraq, Clark himself.
Yeah, James Woolsey was on, you know, the former CIA director, who's like part of the neocon crowd, was on the air with Lou Dobbs last night on CNN, saying the same thing. And there is some reality to that. The reality is that, and it's been reported by all these guys, that back in 99, Al-Qaeda had, or Bin Laden, apparently representatives of Al-Qaeda, had contacted Osama Bin Laden. Or Saddam Hussein, rather. They actually had contacted him. And basically he told them to go take a leap. But there was a contact. There was a contact, sure enough.
There was a contact, but no alignment.
No, none whatsoever. In fact, the contact turned into hostility. But that part seems to get forgotten, you know, by the reinventors of history. So
yeah. And I remember my third one.
Okay.
And this is related to the previous caller who's talked about Bush just sitting there at the school for another half an hour or something.
Yeah, that was about 20 minutes.
I also heard somewhere that when somebody came and whispered to Bush that it had happened, his reply was
it the terrorists? Yeah, yeah. That's again, this is a story that I don't know for sure. I have heard that and read that, but I don't know for sure. But David in Santa Fe, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. David in Lovelock, Nevada. We got just about 10 seconds here, David. You got a quick one, or you want to hang on over the break?
Yeah, it's a forensic observation on that tape you played.
Yeah.
Right before Bush says mentions about New York.
Yep.
He says ah.
Yeah,
listen to it carefully. You'll hear it.
He says ah a lot.
Yeah. He's not telling the truth.
Yeah, it may well be. Okay, David, thank you very much. Appreciate the call. 1-866-889-8894. Tom Hartman here with you. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America. Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
The Earth is entering a time of global change like nothing in its history, according to a new book. I'm Gina Waleko for Earthwatch Radio. To understand the changes affecting our climate and atmosphere, scientists often compare the present to the past. Will Steffen is co-author of a new book, Global Change in the Earth System. Steffen says humans are causing enormous shifts in the Earth's atmosphere and climate. He says these changes are so drastic, there's no other time in history that compares. And, without these comparisons, it's hard to tell whether the Earth's natural checks and balances will work properly.
The Earth system is now in what we call scientifically a no-analog state. And by that we mean we cannot go back into the past and find another time in Earth's history when so many aspects of the environment are changing, and they are changing at such a fast rate. This means it's very difficult for us to predict just where the Earth's environment is going and how it might change.
For example, humans are putting more carbon dioxide into the air than ever before. Steffen says about half of this CO2 is absorbed by the land and the ocean, but he says that will change in about 50 years. To Steffen, this means there's a window of opportunity to cut down on climate-changing pollutants. He says without action, the Earth may not recover.
What we've tried to do in this book is be as accurate scientifically as we can, not exaggerate anything, not beat anything up. And even at that, it's pretty scary. It's scary for a good reason. I think that there are some very profound changes that are going on to our own life support system, being driven by our own activities. It's not so much a doomsday book, but it's definitely a wake-up call book.
Steffen says it's time to get serious about our impacts on the planet. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to be on our program today. Brent in Pennsylvania is on the line. Hey, Brent, welcome to the Tom Hartman Show.
How are you doing?
Great. What's up?
Hey, I just had a question for you. Now, hindsight, I guess, is 2020 in regards to the Clinton administration telling the Bush administration that Al-Qaeda was going to pose such a large threat. And I had just heard this in passing whenever I consider myself independent. But isn't it, is it true that Clinton cut defense and intelligence spending? You know, I mean, it's, I'm not blaming Clinton for what happened on 9/11, nor am I blaming Bush. And I think too many people get caught up in, you know, blaming one, the left or the right.
Sure. You know, frankly, I don't know whether or not Clinton cut defense spending or intelligence spending. I know that counterterrorism under Clinton went up dramatically. You know, the stuff that had to do with 9/11, that spending went up dramatically. Whether he was, you know, trying to cut back on bases that aren't necessary or trying to cut out what, you know, weapons programs that he thought were pork or whatever, or whether he was, you know, on some sort of Machiavellian mission to eviscerate the United States military, like the right-wingers say, I frankly don't know.
Right.
But I do know that spending on counterterrorism went up dramatically during the Clinton administration. So I can tell you that for a fact. And in fact, I cited the statistics earlier in the show. I've got, you know, it's like now it's buried in a stack here, but it was something like 20-30% over a 3-year period there.
Okay, great.
Okay, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you, Brett. And let's see, let's move along here to Israel in New York. Hey, Israel.
How are you doing, Tom?
Great, we're just about out of time. What's up?
I got a question that you might want to react. People seen the picture of John Kerry with Jane Fonda in Star. I heard on Michael Savage they're calling him a traitor, actually.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe that.
Yeah, because...
And I want to listen to your reaction for that on the radio, if you don't mind. I'll do it.
Yeah, okay. Well, we'll see what people have to say about that. We'll have to do it in another segment, though, at the end of this one.
Yeah, but it looks strange that a person that risks his life...
Yeah.
And serving Vietnam. He didn't have his daddy pick up something in the Ranger.
Yeah, Israel, we're going to have to get to it another time. I'm sorry, we're out of time on this one. This is the Tom Hartman radio program, the pill that will help you escape the matrix.
The heart has come to open in a fundamental way. Democracy is coming to the USA.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he a... Nureyev. Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh?
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by America.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. Former White House counterterrorism expert Richard Clark accused the Bush administration on Tuesday of going on the offensive against him to divert attention from the truth that the administration did virtually nothing about al-Qaeda prior to September 11, 2001. Clark, author of the newly released book Against All Enemies, also said the administration focused on alleged Iraqi ties to the terrorist attacks, while there was no evidence that Saddam Hussein's dictatorship was involved. Clark said the White House is papering over facts such as in the weeks immediately after 9/11, the president signed a national security directive instructing the Pentagon to prepare for the invasion of Iraq, even though they knew at the time that Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11. Members of the federal panel that's been looking into 9/11 say they're not hearing from everyone they want to hear from. The panel has opened 2 days of hearings on the anti-terrorism efforts of the Bush and Clinton administrations before 9/11. The 10-member panel had invited National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice to testify. She declined, with the White House citing concerns about separation of powers. Former Democratic Congressman Timothy Raymer noted that Rice has been featured in the media disputing the claims in Richard Clark's book, Against All Enemies. He suggests that the debate shouldn't be played out in the media, but before the panel. Top Democrats stepped up their attacks on George W. Bush's credibility on Tuesday, accusing the White House of abuses of power and trying to squelch dissent and bad news on a range of fronts. They recalled moves to discredit former Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill, who questioned Bush's Iraq policy in a book in January, and the leaking of the identity of CIA operative Valerie Plame when her husband, former diplomat Joseph Wilson, accused Bush of hyping pre-war intelligence on Iraq. Senate Democratic Leader Tom Daschle of South Dakota said, "We are seeing abuses of power that cannot be tolerated. The president needs to put a stop to it right now. We need to get to the truth, and the president needs to help us do that." More news after this.
Military veterans deserve better. They must wait endlessly for basic health care from the Department of Veterans Affairs. If you or a military veteran you know is one of the many heroes waiting for VA health care, the American Legion wants to tell your story to your elected officials in Washington, D.C.
Visitors to a zoo in eastern India have been banned from laughing after a state politician said he found it offensive. It happened after members of a local laughter club visited the Sanjay Gandhi Botanical Garden and Zoo in Patna. The politician became angry when he saw the group laughing while he was walking past the director's office. After ordering them to stop laughing, he issued instructions to a zoo official banning laughter at the zoo. For Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Pundits and other political cynics scoff at citizens' efforts to reform America's money-corrupted political process, saying it's as futile as trying to teach table manners to a hog. The effort wears you out, and it only annoys the hog. That's cute, but if the cynics would only lift their eyes from their myopic focus on Washington, they would see something big taking place in such diverse states as Maine and Arizona. Citizens in both places have already passed grassroots initiatives providing for dramatic reform, public financing of elections. These clean election initiatives give candidates of any party the chance to finance both their primary and general election campaigns with public funds, provided they forego taking special interest money. Not only does this help get corrupt money out of the process, but it also means a regular person can run for office again, since a school teacher, taxi driver, farmer, shopkeeper, steelworker, or anyone else has access to a pool of money to make them financially competitive with the incumbents. Maine and Arizona have run two election cycles under clean money laws, and the results would warm the cockles of the coldest cynic's heart. There have been more challengers to incumbents than before, with more women, Latinos, and Native Americans running and winning. Half of the challengers using the clean money option say they would not have run without it. Because this system creates more choices, offering fresh faces and new ideas, voter turnout is ratcheting upward. And here's the big one, public financing is working. 59% of Maine's legislators and 36% of those in Arizona have now been elected without taking any tainted money. And publicly funded candidates in Arizona last year won 7 of 9 statewide offices, including the governor and attorney general. This is Jim Hightower saying, if you want clean elections, call Public Campaign, 202-293-0222.
I'll just see who that is then.
Oh no! South American killer bees! They're going for my eyes!
A swarm of killer bees. That's one thing you don't want in your house. One thing you do want in your house is a better looking roof with Plitanium plywood from Georgia Pacific. Other roof sheathing materials can swell at the edges, creating an unsightly checkerboard pattern under your shingles. Plitanium roofs provide a more uniform surface. Plitanium plywood. Build it better.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. 7 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border. Terrestrial radio stations from, well, from coast to coast and border to border. We're pleased to have Jeffrey Smith with us this hour. This is a fascinating topic. What's up with genetically modified foods? Do genetically modified foods represent a threat to the human race, to you and me, to us, to our children? They represent a threat to the biosphere, and what are the politics of it? Anyhow, Jeffrey Smith has been involved with genetically modified foods for nearly a decade. He's worked with nonprofit and political groups on the issue. In 1998, he ran for the U.S. Congress to raise awareness of this issue. He's the author of a book, the foreword written by Francis Moore. Is it LePay?
LePay.
LePay. Seeds of Deception: Exposing Industry and Government Lies About the Safety of the Genetically Altered Foods You Are Eating. Jeffrey, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Thank you.
And if you have a question you'd like to call, a question for Jeffrey or comments about GMOs, 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. Jeffrey, first of all, just, you know, some real quick definitions. How is a genetically modified food different from, you know, good old Gregor Mendel, you know, of hybrids and the traditional way that, you know, you pollinate things? And
well, traditionally, you take genes from the same species, you cross-pollinate related traits. The mother and father plants give all of their genes to their offspring. Here you take genes from potentially unrelated species, bacteria, virus, rats, humans, and take them out individually and insert them artificially into the genome, causing creations that would never naturally occur.
These aren't just different species. These are different kingdoms.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Absolutely.
So, and you're suggesting that in your book that genetically modified organisms actually represent a threat.
Absolutely. Even the scientists at the FDA said these could create unpredicted side effects, including toxins, allergens, new diseases, antibiotic-resistant diseases, and nutritional problems that wouldn't necessarily be obvious to those that created. They insisted that long-term safety testing would be necessary to protect the public, but the political appointees, including the former attorney for Monsanto, who had become the deputy commissioner for policy at the FDA, said no testing necessary. We'll just allow these foods to be fed to the public if the industry themselves say they're safe.
Yeah, I wrote the story of that guy in Unequal Protection. He actually came out of industry, went to work for the government, wrote the regulations that regulated the industry he worked for, and then went back into industry.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was absolutely startling. So, you know, with some of these products, you know, I mean, of course, some of these are actually designed to produce drugs, for example. I mean, this is one of the big concerns in Europe is that they're inserting genes into plants so that the plants will produce antibiotics, for example, or drugs, you know, insulin, whatever, and that gene that causes that plant to produce that might get into the wild and infect other plants, and the consequences could just be, I mean, you know, suddenly you got wild animals and other plants eating. Is that a realistic concern?
Absolutely. It's already happened. There's contamination that's caused the destruction of millions of dollars worth of crops. But in fact, the foods, the things that they call foods as genetically modified, are also showing signs of real serious danger, and they're cross-pollinating, and they're what we eat. For example, soon after genetically modified soy was introduced to UK, soy allergies skyrocketed by 50%. Now, the genetically modified soy that's grown in this country has an increase in an allergen called trypsin inhibitor. That might be a reason. It also might.
But nobody knows.
No one knows because no one's done the follow-up studies. In fact, there was a genetically modified tomato that was approved by the FDA, and if you look at the animal studies, they force-fed these rats because the rats refused to eat it on their own. Several developed stomach lesions. 7 out of 40 died within 2 weeks.
Yeah, I remember a story about potatoes.
Oh, yeah, there's a genetically modified potato that was produced in the UK,
And rats were fed it, and it caused potentially precancerous cell growth in their intestines and stomach, damaged immune systems, smaller brains, livers, and testicles, partial atrophy of the liver, over the equivalent of 10 human years. When the scientist, who was the leading researcher in his field in the world, went public with his research, he was fired from his job after 35 years, silenced with threats of a lawsuit. And he eventually was able to speak when he testified before Parliament and then got his data back, and it's now published.
And whatever happened to those potatoes?
Well, they would have passed the kind of regulation that is normally given. They never actually were fed to people. They were experimental potatoes. But when this particular scientist happened to view the superficial and flimsy research studies that he said were used as the basis for approving genetically modified foods in the UK, he realized if those same potatoes had been submitted to those superficial studies, they would be on the market. But what was worse is that he tracked the cause of the problem, not with the insecticide that the engineered potato was engineered to produce, but somehow with the process of engineering. Hmm. And he used the same process that's used in the foods we eat.
This is the gene gun.
Gene gun, right.
Yeah, the good old-fashioned gene guns. And you can actually, what's amazing, and I think most people don't realize, is that you can build a lab to produce your own genetically modified organisms for about $5,000.
And you can introduce it to the food supply legally without telling the government.
Wow. That I didn't know.
Yes, there's no mandatory notification unless you happen to put an insecticide in, and then the EPA has to know.
That's
the FDA says, sorry, no real regulation.
That's amazing. 1-866-889-8894 if you have a question. We're talking with Jeffrey Smith, the author of Seeds of Deception, exposing industry and government lies about the safety of the genetically altered foods that you are eating. Jeffrey, I've seen statistics that indicate that something like well over half of the corn, the soybeans, the many of the oil crops, it's called rapeseed in Europe. I think it's called canola here.
That's right.
Our genetic and our cotton. Of course, we're not eating the cotton, but
cottonseed oil.
Oh yeah. Okay. So that makes its way into our genetically modified. What are the real stats here? What percentage of what we're eating? You know, if you go to the supermarket or you go to the fast food joint.
80% of soy grown in the United States. 38% of corn. Only 3 to 5% of the sweet corn, but the corn that is genetically modified is used in the corn derivatives like high fructose corn syrup, etc., as well as animal feed. 70% of the cotton and over 60% of the canola. Those are the four major crops. They constitute 99% of the genetically modified crops. However, there's also Hawaiian papaya, a little bit of zucchini and crookneck squash, Quest brand tobacco, and there's milk from cows treated with the genetically modified bovine growth hormone, which actually ends up with a higher level of a hormone called IGF-1, which is a very high risk factor for breast cancer and for colon and prostate and lung cancer. There's also enzymes and additives that are created from genetically modified bacteria and fungus that have been transformed into living factories. One of those bacteria was responsible for a contaminated version of L-tryptophan, a over-the-counter essential amino acid that was eventually responsible for the deaths of 100 Americans and 5 to 10,000 fell sick.
This is the stuff that came out of Japan.
Yes. Yeah. And it's interesting that the industry pointed to a change in the filter in January 1989 as the alternate explanation protecting the reputation of biotechnology. However, I bring out information in my book that shows that hundreds of people got sick during the 4 years prior to the change in the filter. And that information...
Change in the filter. What
yes,
do you mean by
in other
filter?
Words, they created a genetically modified bacteria to produce the L-tryptophan more economically. And supposedly, the only biotechnology strain that was introduced was on December 24th, 1988. 2 weeks later, they changed the filter on the fermentation vat, and that was the excuse that the biotechnology company said, it wasn't the genetic engineering of the strain that
it
caused...
It was this mechanical thing.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So it turns out earlier strains of bacteria were also genetically modified, also creating these contaminants, and also responsible for disease.
Yeah.
And if that information had been made available, and it was known by the FDA, they never told the public, they never told Congress.
Well, so then if so much of what's really a substantial portion of our food supply, or at least the food supply that's being fed to the animals that are part of our food supply, is now genetically modified already, why aren't we seeing people dropping dead around America if this stuff is so dangerous?
Certainly people do die in America, and they do get sick. And there's been an increase, for example, a doubling of food-related illnesses between 1994 and 2001 relating to happened to correspond with the introduction of a lot of genetically modified.
But isn't an awful lot of that have to do with antibiotic resistance that's developed?
No, they don't know. There's a significant amount of it that they haven't been able to trace. I would say that if you don't look for it, you won't find it. It's a simple equation. And it turns out, like, there's a dramatic increase in allergies in this country, in Russia. There were some scientists that held a press conference in Russia and said, in the last 3 years, we've had a tripling of allergies corresponding to the introduction of genetically modified foods. Now, is it possible that these foods can elicit increased allergic response? Yes. The BT corn on the market that creates its own pesticide has been shown to have an immunological response in mice that's greater than cholera toxin. It's had excessive cell growth in the stomach. It's exposed in small amounts to farm workers. It created skin reactions. 39 Filipinos living next to a BT cornfield developed severe symptoms during pollination and then had their blood tested to verify that there was an immunological response going on inside their blood. And also, the BT corn would not pass the WHO's recommended tests designed to keep allergenic GMOs from getting on the market. And yet the FDA says it can go on the market. So it's also interesting with this BT that it lowers the threshold for other allergies. And so it's possible that it's making the immune system more susceptible. Now, you mentioned antibiotic resistance. Inside most genetically engineered foods is an antibiotic-resistant marker gene.
Right.
And this one...
That's the one. That's how they know that it's a genetically modified organism, because that's the flag.
Yes. And it turns out that the FDA scientists who were asked to approve it were appalled at this concept. They said it would be, quote, a serious health hazard, all capital letters. And yet the biotechnology industry assured them that, no, don't worry, it's all destroyed during digestion. Well, in the only human feeding study ever conducted, they found that a transgenic gene jumped from soy burgers and soy milkshake to gut bacteria. This was an herbicide-resistant gene. But it shows that, the antibiotic-resistant marker genes that are resistant to ampicillin or tetracycline, these could jump to our gut bacteria and create super diseases.
Yeah.
But what was worse was released last month. There's a promoter gene, something from a virus that turns on these foreign genes permanently, 24/7, around the clock, forcing them to pump out proteins at full volume. This promoter gene transferred to rat tissue and was there a full 3 days later after a single meal. Now, if this were to transfer to human tissue and get inside our DNA, it could, in theory, turn on genes at random permanently at full volume, which could be...
Well, all of a sudden, the color of your eyes changes?
Could be. Who knows? It also can create genetic instability, because there's a mutation spot in this. It could also potentially promote excessive cell growth, as has been seen in rats, like, which could lead to cancer. And some people think it might even switch on dormant viruses.
Which all raises the question, why are we doing this?
Well, millions of dollars are at stake because these foods can be patented. They are bundled with herbicides. For example, the Roundup Ready soy, you bundle it with Roundup herbicide because it doesn't die when you spray it with herbicide. And the United States government back in 1992, convinced that these were safe, said this will reduce foreign surplus deficit, you know, our export deficit.
Right.
And so right now there's a tremendous effort by the United States to push this food on the world and even taking to legal battles against certain regions that want to avoid it or label it or resist it.
Yeah. And we've got about 30 seconds left here. What's going on in Europe around this?
Well, they are under attack through the World Trade Organization, challenged by the United States. They are slowly trying to approve some new brands so that it will make the whole challenge obsolete. But even if they approve new brands, they've got a couple of obstacles. First of all, the UK government said, well, the biotechnology companies have to be responsible for the liability, and the biotechnology company says, no way, you pay if we make a mistake.
Yeah, amazing. Jeffrey Smith, the author of Seeds of Deception, exposing industry and government lies about the safety of the genetically engineered foods you're eating. The Tom Hartman Radio Program, 20 minutes past the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house?
Yes.
Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service.
Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
It's quite a...
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. New analysis from researchers at the University of California at Berkeley portend a troublesome future for workers in Silicon Valley. They predict 1 in 6 current high-tech jobs in the Valley could be sent overseas in the coming years. For the total U.S. workforce, the risk of being outsourced is 1 in 10. They also forecast a rise in offshoring for more clerical-type work, like jobs involving paralegal skills or the processing of medical and insurance claims. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Walmart doesn't just dominate the discount retail and grocery industries. It's muscling in on a much more lucrative market, campaign contributions. Walmart is currently the second largest overall donor in the 2004 election cycle, according to an analysis by the Center for Responsive Politics, giving 85% of its donations to Republicans and 15% to Democrats. In the 2002 federal election cycle, Walmart came in 71st among the top 100 donors.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the Tune Tracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the pro version with traffic interface and only $149.95 for the original Tune Tracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with Jeffrey Smith. Jeffrey M. Smith, the author of Seeds of Deception, exposing industry and government lies about the safety of the genetically engineered foods you are eating. Jeffrey, first of all, your website is
seedsofdeception.com.
There you go. That's a good one. And very straightforward. What can we do about this?
Well, I think one of the most important things that people can do are to avoid eating genetically modified foods.
But there's no labeling. I mean, how can you do
that? Yes, even though 96% of Americans want it labeled, the FDA, who is charged with promoting the biotechnology industry, refuses to label it. So what we have to do is either buy organic, buy products that say non-GMO, or avoid the big four, soy, corn, cotton, and canola, and the derivatives of soy and corn, which unfortunately are in more than 70% of the processed foods. On my site, there's a whole description of how to do that, even in restaurants, and there's even brand names that are non-GMO where you can find on the site.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The other thing we can do is a lot of individuals realize that the central governments have been compromised in their approval process, approving potentially dangerous foods. So local initiatives are happening all over. Mendocino County on March 2nd passed a ballot initiative to ban the planting of genetically modified crops in their county. There's interesting legislation before Vermont that would place the liability for contamination on the biotechnology industry, and there's a moratorium proposed also in legislation. There's GMO-free zones cropping up in New Zealand, Australia, Austria, Italy, Brazil. All over, local governments and individuals are taking over and saying, we don't want these dangerous or potentially dangerous crops and foods in our lives, and we're going to take measures to protect ourselves.
What ultimately happened to that farmer in Canada who got prosecuted by, I believe it was Monsanto,
that's right,
because his crops had been cross-pollinated by the wind from a GMO product crop next to his?
Exactly. He's been saving seeds and developing seeds for 50 years, canola, and he discovered quite accidentally that genetically modified herbicide-resistant Monsanto brand canola had contaminated his fields, ruining his 50 years, and yet Monsanto sued him because it was Monsanto's intellectually patented property on his property. So the judge awarded Monsanto 100% of his seeds and 100% of his profits for a year. It went to appeals, and he lost again. Now it's in the Supreme Court. We should find out within the next 5 months.
This is the Supreme Court of Canada, isn't it?
That's right.
Canadian. Yeah, I thought that was a fascinating story. Corn syrup. Let's talk about this for just a minute. I have this theory, and it's just from observation, that the obesity epidemic in the United States, I remember when Coke made the transition from Coke to New Coke, and then they went back to Classic Coke, and it seemed to me that it was really just a smokescreen to move from cane syrup to corn syrup, because that's what happened. And the Coke, and you know, everybody was hoarding the old bottles of old Coke because it was actually made with cane sugar instead of with corn. And then the new Coke Classic even has corn syrup in it. And all of these soft drinks now, not just to pick on Coke, I mean, it's all over the place. And the rise of corn syrup seemed to correspond with the rise of genetically modified corn in the with obesity, and I'm wondering if you think there's anything to that. And then we get a call here.
Sure, a lot of people have said that, and it's hard to say because no one's doing the follow-up research. There is a syndrome where people are intolerant to fructose, for example, from corn, but I'm not sure if that's related to obesity.
Okay, let's get a quick question here. Charlie in Massachusetts is on the line. Hey, Charlie, welcome to the program.
Thanks very much. I was wondering, I know Monsanto was Bill Clinton's largest contributor, and that had a lot to do with how this got approvals. What's Bush getting his money? What's the money connection for Bush?
Good question, Charlie. We've got about 10 seconds here, Jeffrey.
Secretary of Agriculture Ann Veneman was on the board of Calgene, a subsidiary to Monsanto. They put out the Flavor Saver tomato. Donald Rumsfeld worked as the head of G.D. Searle, a subsidiary of Monsanto at the time that puts out a genetically modified aspartame. Even Clarence Thomas used to work for Monsanto. A lot of the members of the Bush administration are connected.
Remarkable. Okay, thank you very much. Jeffrey Smith, author of Seeds of Deception, Exposing Industry and Government Lies About the Safety of the Genetically Engineered Foods You Are Eating, www.seedsofdeception.com. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program. We'll be back.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Early this month, MCI finished the overhaul of its books from its WorldCom era, and the damage from the company's fraud-laden collapse in 2002 totals a record $74.4 billion. The restatement completely wipes profits off the books from 2000 onward. MCI attributes more than $14 billion directly to the financial misdeeds of previous executives now facing criminal charges. The rest of its loss, it says, is from depreciation tied to the ongoing slump in the telecom sector as a
pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. The offshoring avalanche continues. General Motors plans to slash the number of white-collar workers it employs domestically while shipping the jobs overseas. An internal GM memo says, quote, in 2003, we began offshoring activities, moving $3.5 million of work to lower-cost locations. And we are planning to increase that to $48 million in 2004. On Monday, Michigan Governor Jennifer Granholm responded to the offshoring threat with two orders giving preferences for state contracts to firms that employ local workers.
The birthplace of the labor union that helped bring democracy to Poland and crack the Iron Curtain faces the wrecking ball courtesy of gentrification. The Solidarity Union got its start in the Gdansk shipyard during a strike in 1980. Now a U.S. developer owns nearly half of it and wants to turn it into a condo and shopping complex. The city's hesitant to see the yard and its 3,000 decent-paying jobs disappear. It supports an alternate redevelopment plan, which would augment the shipyard with affordable housing and new schools, as well as some sort of solidarity museum. The American developers are willing to sell the works back to the Polish, but only at a price several times its market value.
2,200 United Auto Workers union members in Indiana averted a strike this week, reaching a tentative deal with Guide Corporation, an auto parts supplier for General Motors. The five-year contract proposal preserves health and pension benefits and includes a $3,000 signing bonus. The deal was negotiated under a threat by GM to move to a cheaper offshore supplier unless workers submitted to what officials called a competitive agreement. A ratification vote is scheduled for later this week.
Politics in the workplace is growing, especially in corporate America. This year, 99 of the 150 largest companies in the country are conducting some form of voter registration program for their employees, up from less than 30 2 years ago. Tied into many of these are supplemental voter education efforts, which mostly consist of company-supplied information on candidates' voting records and positions on major issues. Specific company endorsements are forbidden, but the strategy seems to work. Research from the 2002 elections conducted by the Business Industry Political Action Committee boasts that among new voters who cast their ballots based on employer-supplied information alone, more than 60% selected the most business-friendly candidate in contested races.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Bush administration's new prescription drug benefits may make Medicare's finances sick. A report from the Medicare and Social Security Programs Trustees Fund found that the Medicare costs are now estimated to top $500 billion over 10 years. Unless action is taken to curb costs, the fund could become insolvent in 2019, 7 years earlier than forecast last year.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.com.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Moving toward a bright and sparkling future by returning democracy to the United States of America. Nothing less, our mission, nothing less than moving away from the neocon nightmare and back to democracy here in the United States. 26 minutes before the hour, carbon dioxide. The CEO may say, well, carbon dioxide? Carbon dioxide hits record levels. Researchers find carbon dioxide, the gas largely blamed for global warming, has reached record high levels in the atmosphere after growing at an accelerated pace in the past year, say scientists monitoring the sky from a 2-mile-high station atop a Hawaiian volcano. This from a story by Charles Hanley in the Associated Press this Saturday. Before the industrial age and the extensive use of fossil fuels, this is, in other words, 300 years ago, the concentration of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere was pretty steady at about 280 parts per million. Now, well, on Friday, it was at 379 parts per million. And that's compared with 376 parts per million a year ago. So it's gone up 3 parts per million in a year. This is unprecedented. And this is the sort of thing that leads to these extremes of weather that that are biting us in the butt, as they say, that are, you know, going to cause us problems. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's expert Peter Tanz says part of the problem is the United States. Of course, he says China is taking off economically and burning a lot of fuel, as is India. So we have this problem going on all around the world. And this is, you know, it's funny. I threw it away. I should have hung on to it. Last week when this report first came out, I also got an email, the right-wing response to this. Oh, didn't you know? The first point in the talking points was, the major greenhouse gas is not carbon dioxide, it's water vapor. Yes, indeed, folks, it's water vapor. It's twice as effective a greenhouse gas as is carbon dioxide. True. What they forget to tell you is that the atmosphere can only hold a certain amount of water vapor. So, you know, activity of humans isn't going to increase or decrease it, with one small exception. And that is, as you know, just from your own experience, that when it gets cold, particularly those of you who live in northern climates like I do here in Vermont. I mean, here in Vermont during the winter, we run humidifiers. I got a pan that sits on a radiator here in my office that evaporates water into the air, because as it gets cold, the ability of the air to hold moisture diminishes until the water actually starts condensing out of the air. This is called the dew point. And, you know, when it happens up in the upper atmosphere, it's called creating clouds and you get rain. And when you get below zero, or below freezing, below 32, the ability of the air to hold moisture just, you know, pretty much collapses, because the moisture freezes and precipitates out. So you get these very, very low humidities. So what you discover is that the ability of the atmosphere to hold water vapor, which, as the cons are correct in saying, represents twice as much of a greenhouse gas consequence as does carbon dioxide. The ability of the atmosphere to hold water vapor is a function of its temperature. And so as the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere goes up, the overall temperature of the planet goes up, which causes the atmosphere to be able to hold more more water vapor, which accelerates the process of global warming. Now, you know, in the little right-wing screed I got to be read on the radio, I'm on these, you know, I get these talking points from the right-wing think tanks. And as do all talk radio hosts. They didn't make that point. They just said, be sure to let your listeners know that carbon dioxide is not the major greenhouse gas. Water vapor is. Well, yeah. But it's carbon dioxide that is basically the regulator of the whole thing. The other problem is that as carbon dioxide increases in the atmosphere, it warms up the atmosphere. The atmosphere warms up. That causes less freezing in the northern latitudes. You know, there's a big problem for the Inuit, people that used to be called Eskimos living up in the extreme north of Canada, that and polar bears and things. I mean, they're having problems breeding and things because their ice flows are breaking up. But for the Inuit, it's a problem because the ground, which was permafrost, permanently frozen, is melting and turning to mud. And, you know, it's not safe to go out and go out on the ice and fish and hunt during the length of the season that it used to be. And there's all these consequences that are happening. And the result is that as this permafrost around the world thaws, of course, it has old vegetative matter in it, old plant matter that has decayed or is decaying, and it starts to release more carbon into the atmosphere, in both the form of carbon dioxide and methane. So, again, this is what's called a positive feedback loop. That is, it reinforces. So you get a little bit of warming. It causes there to become more carbon dioxide, which causes there to be more warming, which causes there to be... And the one that they're really worried about are the hydrate, as I recall they're called, crystals, these large carbon-based... wads of stuff that are in the deep ocean, where the carbon hydrides, I believe that they're called. I'd have to go back and look, but it's these collections of basically it's like sort of like natural gas that has been frozen. I think a lot of it is methane. But anyhow, now there are some folks who are saying, oh, we don't have to worry about the oil crisis. There's all this carbon, you know, at the bottom of the ocean that we can just drill down and tap up, suck it up. Well, number one, that's going to release more carbon into the atmosphere. But the big concern is what they call the soda bottle effect. And that is that as the oceans warm, two things happen. One, they release the carbon dioxide that they're holding into the atmosphere because, as you know, if you've ever had a bottle of Coke get warm on you, or any other soft drink, you know, as carbon dioxide, as carbonated waters get warm, they release their carbon dioxide. It goes flat. Where do the bubbles go from the soft drink? They go into the atmosphere. So number one is the oceans warm up as a consequence of global warming, which is real and documented. The right-wing take on this now is, oh, this is just part of normal cycles. No, wrong, sorry. Yes, there are normal cycles. This isn't one of them. But as the oceans warm up, number one, they release their carbon dioxide into the atmosphere in increasing quantities, which again feeds this positive feedback loop. And the big worry is that if the warming starts working its way down into the deeper levels of the ocean, as it is doing now, they're documenting, this has been documented, that it'll start warming up these basically frozen methane deposits on the seabed, and they will bubble up. And they refer to this as the pop bottle, the soda bottle effect or consequence. And this could produce an explosion of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. I mean, we could go from, you know, in the 300s to the 500 or 600 part per million, and we would suddenly be back where we were during the Carboniferous period, rendering much of the planet uninhabitable, at least for the current species and perhaps for us, you know, and certainly for many of our food crops. So anyhow, that's in the news. Patients taking antidepressants can become suicidal. You probably saw this in the news. It was just a couple days ago this was released. A scientific advisory panel urged the Food and Drug Administration last month to issue stronger warnings to physicians and to the public about the possibility that teenagers and children given antidepressant drugs, particularly the SSRI drugs, the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, that these, Prozac, for example, Zoloft, Wellbutrin, Lovox, or Luvox, Celexa, Lexapro, Effexor, Cerazone, and Remeron are the ones that are included in the warning, that these drugs, if you've ever known anybody who's gone on one of these, and it's really startling. I mean, these are among the most prescribed drugs in America. I saw a statistic. In fact, I actually included in one of my books on ADHD a couple of years ago. This was maybe 4 years ago or so, that fully 10% of all adults in the United States are taking psychoactive drugs of one form or another. One out of 10 people are medicated. One out of 10 adults are medicated with some form of psychoactive drug, whether it's an upper or a downer. We're not talking antibiotics here. And if you've ever known somebody who's gone on these drugs, what happens is that they start to, what's called in psychology circles, lose affect. Or affect flattens out, which means basically that their ability to get really emotionally involved with things diminishes. Now, for somebody whose major emotional involvement with things is panic or terror, or extreme depression, it's a good thing to flatten that out. And that's, you know, and so I'm not saying that nobody should take these medications. And those are the cases where it's indicated. But as much as it flattens out the negative emotions, it also flattens out the positive emotions. And so people don't feel as sparkly and as joyful and as up. And they also, it appears that the mechanism by which this suicide thing is happening, and this is a subject of speculation, this, you know, nobody really knows, but some of the speculation is that there's a sense of disconnect that occurs with people. When they lose a certain threshold of their emotional spectrum, the emotional spectrum that's available to them, they disconnect from themselves and from the consequences of their actions. You know, which brings us back to all of these kids who have committed these crimes in various places around the United States, where, you know, where they go into schools and shoot them up. And you know, I remember a few years ago I was working on a book on ADHD and the Scientology bunch, you know, who are totally anti-psychiatry, any kind of psychiatric drugs, came along and one of these kids, I think it was one of the kids in Georgia, as I recall, was on Ritalin, and they were like, "See, we told you so. You know, it's these ADD drugs that are causing this." And there was a brief, you know, it was in the press for a couple of days. And what they found was that actually most of the kids, now I don't know if it was more than half of them or not. My recollection is that it was, but I may be wrong. But most of the kids who were on drugs anyway were not on the stimulant drugs like Ritalin. They were on the antidepressants, the SSRIs. And I'd be real interested to know, and frankly, I don't have this information at my fingertips. Louise, we'll have to look into this. What percentage of those kids who have you know, shot up their schools were on one of these SSRI antidepressants? I think this would be a fascinating thing. Moving in the same kind of vein here, no pun intended. I'm changing the topic, and I'm not. You know, the whole thing of the psychology of crime and the psychology of, you know, what happens to people? How are they affected by things? The United States has really changed the rules of the game internationally with regard to how prisoners of war are treated. And there are many people in the United States military who are very concerned that the consequences of the Bush administration saying that it's okay for us to take prisoners of war and do one of two things, either one, hand them off to allies who don't respect human rights, or we'll send them to Saudi Arabia where they will you know, hook them up to electric cattle prods and things to interrogate them, or worse, number one, or we're going to take them to Guantanamo Bay, and they will not have access to attorneys. They won't have access. I mean, the Geneva Convention is very specific about what you can and cannot do with prisoners of war, and we have defied it. We've said, sorry, these guys are not prisoners of war. They are enemy combatants, which is a term that technically means that they're still engaged in combat. And, of course, you can kill an enemy combatant. You can, you know, if you're on the field of combat with somebody and they are shooting at you, you can shoot back. And so, you know, the Bush administration is basically saying, all bets are off. These aren't prisoners of war. These are enemy combatants. We can do anything to them. And there's some people who are very concerned about this. So far, this is, you know, more than 100 prisoners from Guantanamo have been released. And some of the stories they're telling are really quite worrisome. While some detainees may be guilty of crimes, reports the Center for American Progress, three former detainees recently repatriated to Britain said they were arrested after they went to the region to arrange a marriage for one of the men. They described enforced privation, petty cruelty, beatings, and planned humiliations. According to government officials, in order to make detainees as compliant as possible, they are schooled in a system of rewards and penalties calibrated to their behavior, including potential access to books and puzzles or being deprived of towels and a toothbrush. Do we want this done to our soldiers when they get captured overseas? This administration has to figure out that there are consequences to these kinds of actions. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't.
But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
A slight warming of the Earth's atmosphere could seriously magnify the greenhouse effect. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Our use of fossil fuels has put a lot of extra carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, and scientists say that's part of the reason the Earth is getting warmer. But the extra CO2 does more than magnify the natural greenhouse effect. It helps fill the atmosphere with yet another greenhouse gas. That gas is water vapor, and when it comes to trapping heat in the atmosphere, it's twice as efficient as carbon dioxide. Dick Weatherald is a climate expert with the U.S. government's National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. He says carbon dioxide is the trigger that will produce higher concentrations of airborne water vapor.
Water vapor is probably the strongest or most effective greenhouse gas. But the carbon dioxide, of course, is the trigger because it initiates the greenhouse warming. And then once the greenhouse warming starts taking place, what that does is it increases the temperature of the atmosphere so that it can hold more water vapor than it could before.
Weatherald calls this chain of events a water vapor feedback. A slight bit of global warming puts more water vapor into the atmosphere. The water vapor traps more heat that's created by solar energy, and the atmosphere gets even warmer. Weatherald says the consequences of that warming will be hard to avoid.
The problem is that it's going to take a long, long time for the system to stabilize, even if we drastically cut greenhouse gases. So there are probably some changes, some global warming that we're going to have to deal with and live with.
Weatherald is the author of a paper on global warming that will be published this spring in the Journal of Climate. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
fearlessly exploring the truth of the day. Here's Tom Hartman.
Of us. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. If you'd like to be on the program, Jeff in Denver's on the line. Hey, Jeff, how's life?
Well, it's doing fine now, but I was one of those people who was clinically depressed for a long time.
Uh-huh.
And I've had direct experience with SSRIs, and particularly negative effects of them.
Mm-hmm.
Both Zoloft and Prozac were probably two of the worst experiences of my life. One caused a severe emotional anxiety, the other one caused a physical anxiety.
Yeah, yeah.
And also have been involved with somebody recently who may have had a psychotic episode because of an antidepressant.
Yeah, well, you know, go ahead.
And it's extremely difficult to tell what caused it.
Yeah, and the rationale of the psychiatric community is, oh, well, these people were nutty anyway to begin with, and, you know, blah de blah. But, you know, I ran a community for abused kids in New Hampshire from 1978 to 1983, and I'm still president of the board of directors of it here 25 years later. And over the years, I've seen, you know, more and more of our kids being prescribed these SSRI drugs, and which didn't even exist in 78 when I was there. You know, I mean, back then it was Stelazine and Melaril and things, you know, the antipsychotics. Narcotics, you know, and I have seen a lot of ab reactions. A lot of these kids get serious panic disorders. The lack of affect is the most common side effect that I've seen. But some of them they react to it as if they took acid. I mean,
it's incredible. I've never been through anything like this, and because you know it takes weeks to titrate the things and get off it.
Yeah.
You know, it just lasts for 3 weeks, even if you immediately notice a reaction.
Yeah, and it's more habit forming than you know Valium and things.
Yeah. Thankful to say that actually diet, I can see it can get rid of depression in almost every case.
Yeah, and you know fish oils or omega-3 oils seems to be a huge thing for both depression and mania. Jeff, thanks for the call. We're out of time here. It's great to hear from you. This is the Tom Hartman radio program, Truth and Common Sense in Broadcasting. Thanks for joining us today. Thanks to Louise for producing the program. Thanks to Brad Walrod for our music. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up. Thanks to you for listening. Tune in tomorrow, same time, same place. I'll see you here.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman program? Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he that... Nureyev. Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.